Go jump in a Great Lake, 200.
On November 10th, 1975, the Edmund Fitzgerald sank in this largest lake in the Western Hemisphere. Kevin.
What is Superior?
Yep.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
One, two, three.
Bad boy!
Four, five, six.
B.I.G.
Now I have an AT-40 extra. A number two smash called The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The song in which singer Gordon Lightfoot told the true story of 29 men who drowned in a storm on Lake Superior back in 1975.
Joining me now on Nautical Talk Radio is the rector of the Mariners Church in Detroit, Father Rich Ingalls. Tell us about the church and how it inspired Gordon Lightfoot to write the song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
And now...
Asshole. I wish you were on the goddamn Edmund Fitzgerald.
Our feature presentation.
Sorry, what's the date today?
Well, yesterday was the 10th.
Oh, yesterday was the 10th.
For the anniversary, so today.
So you celebrated on your own. It's a shame.
What we do.
It's a shame that we couldn't celebrate today because, you know, it's not today, but yesterday, I'm sure you had a great day.
I did. I had a cake. I had a party. But, just like all holidays, you know, you celebrate them on the actual day. And then also there's the, you know, the work day. And that's what today is. And that's why we've got 5 hours of Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald comedy for you playing.
And by 5 hours, you mean 0 seconds.
6,000 ships have been lost on the Great Lakes in the four centuries since Europeans first came to trade on the shore. A ship built of steel to carry.
No!
I think you're missing some of it, Kevin.
Strong enough to endure the fierce November gales of Lake Superior, a waterway that became a graveyard for 29 men.
Why are you happy that men died?
I'm not. You are. But here's the thing. Here's the fascinating thing. You live for love. Collect. Everything having to do with the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
What a weak event in history that was. 29
really
people?
That's
really?
True. Look at the Philippines today.
Right.
They sneeze at that.
Or look at the look at the Titanic when that went. I mean, this is just like a lifeboat. This is just like a dinghy that went down. Who cares?
Part of the attraction for the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald is that of the hundreds of ships that have gone down in the Great Lakes, this one is the biggest mystery. This is the one that they have not yet been able to figure out why it went down.
And it happened when?
Well, it happened 38 years ago yesterday, 1975.
Well, we certainly should get to it one of these days.
In a musty old sure they're working on it. Detroit,
Is part of the problem, you probably wouldn't care
about
this particular wreck if it hadn't been for that song, and you hate the song so much, and that's why now you hate the wreck?
You've mentioned part of why I hate it. The song might be the worst song ever.
Church bell chimes,
but I can avoid
hold on,
it.
Hold on, here's my part. Okay, what now?
I could avoid it if I didn't have a partner who decided that he needed to play it at least on this day, let alone other times during the year.
Isn't it the very least we can do is to play it?
No, you know what the least we can do is? Just ignore it like we do most things that happened in history.
Why? They have other songs they can play. Even if you want to be depressing, you could play Gordon Lightfoot, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Hey!
About a boat that went down. Any song can perk up the party, but when you need a good depressing number to clear the people out, own that record.
It's true.
When they start, put it on. Everybody leaves. Just go. And a wave hit the boat, and they all died like rats. And they lay there, and their lungs filled with water.
Come
on. They're all going, you know what, Rich? We're going to take off, man. Are you sure? Yeah, we're going to. And back on the shore, their wives had no insurance, and their children turned to drugs and prostitution. Sure, you got to go. Yeah, by the time we slash our wrists and burn the house down, the traffic's bad, you know.
That's the great Richard Jenny right there, the late Richard Jenny, who's as dead as those guys on the Fitz.
Yeah.
So, Anyway, I got a lot of love on Twitter yesterday from people who wanted to thank
you.
Me for the various links that I
Good
posted.
For you.
Documentaries. I posted a link to the ship-to-ship radio transmissions from that day.
Oh, I bet that was fascinating.
And a lot of people
said
that
we're having trouble. Well, really maybe you check if you're getting water on your ship. We are. I don't know why.
That's not how it went.
All points bulletin.
But a lot of listeners who were having their own parties, they thanked
no
me.
No one had their own party.
Not one.
Them. Zero
not
people.
One listener had a party.
There was a lot of hot chicks having lingerie Fitzgerald parties yesterday. You don't know, man.
I do know. The answer to that is absolutely false.
Well, we're just 2 years away from the big 40th
anniversary. All right, let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
How's there not been a made-for-TV movie about your struggles?
Jail Sonnen will be in the studio today.
That's all right.
What a dick.
I'll save that tape.
Yes, indeed.
Although I think he might agree with you, depending on his mood at the time.
Yeah.
I think so.
He's quite the outspoken MMA fighter. We also have Andrew Siciliano in studio talking about the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have
Kevin, you got wings this weekend, didn't you?
I did, as a matter of fact.
That's what I thought, yeah. It looks like they held on right there at the end. And
it's the Arizona Cardinals march to the Super Bowl.
That's right, as you've been predicting all season long.
Harvey Levin from TMZ.com on today's program. Got Citizen of the Day, what's up with Florida? Oh, I don't know, a little girl named Megan Boone.
How about that, finally.
From the Blacklist.
Very cool.
And we also have tickets. I'm sorry, not tickets. We have the announcement for tickets for the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. Night number two.
Excellent.
And this is a strong one as well. So we're going to do that at 7:15 this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 5:52.
7:15 this morning. Details on night number two of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. Can't wait to share this with you. Night number one sold out when they went on sale Friday at noon to street team members. So thanks to everybody who bought those tickets. Proceeds going to great local charities. We'll give you a chance to do it again this week. So stand by for details. Ralph is out for a couple more days. Then he's going to be back, we promise. He's actually filming a scene for the new Kevin Smith movie today. He already did the Seth MacFarlane movie. Now he's working on the Kevin Smith movie. So he's going to be back in a couple days. In the meantime, we are filling in with the showbiz. And I want to start with the interview we've been waiting for, you guys. Thank God Courtney Stodden is speaking out about her breakup of her marriage. Remember, she got married when she was 16 to a 51-year-old. Now she's 19. Her husband is 54, I guess. And it didn't work out for them. Shockingly.
Yes.
And she gave an interview with E! Entertainment Television. Does everybody know who Courtney Stodden is, by the way? Do
well,
I have to
explain just a quick overview?
She's a whore.
Right. A little more than that.
Right. She's famous for nothing except for being married to this much, much older man. She fancies herself a model. She's, claims she was a virgin when she got married, but you've never met anyone more obsessed with sex in her life. She got crazy plastic surgery. She looks about 40 now. I don't know if you guys have seen her lately.
Yeah, she does.
But she looks terrible. So they finally split up, and I thought it was interesting that she revealed why. It occurred to her, hey, maybe I don't need to be with this guy for the rest of my life.
Courtney claims her relationship changed when she competed on Celebrity Big Brother in the UK. It was the first time she'd been away from Doug for more than 24 hours.
I was missing him, but not intimately. I couldn't neglect my desires and wanting to embrace my independence and my freedom.
Translation, she was horny.
She was whoring around. Love it.
That's why she decided she had to divorce her husband, is because she was in England, he was in America, and she needed sex.
But she didn't miss it with him. That, I think, is the key there.
Mm-hmm.
She missed it, and she wanted to explore things, but she sure didn't miss it with him. And the fact that she hasn't been away from him for more than 24 hours is shocking.
Yeah.
That is a surprise. And that's probably bad news for any couple to not spend any time apart, right?
Yeah,
I would
think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's healthy. It's healthy to have your own life and have your own friends and go off and do your own things. And she was, you know, she was 16 years old when they got together. So she's spent the last 3 years kind of under his thumb. All right. Part two of Courtney.
When I look at interviews of you and Doug, he idolizes you. Like, he can't take his eyes off you.
I was definitely scared, but I think I felt more pressured and responsible. It's known that when we got married, he lost his family. His managers dropped him, his agents, it put a pin in his career. He lost some friends, so and I became his world. I just felt like there was a lot of weight on my shoulders.
Their entire relationship was constantly in question.
Looking back, do you reflect on how strange it is that he...
Definitely. I got that it was unconventional, but I didn't get how weird and strange that it came across.
I don't know why they're doing the interview in a nightclub, by the way.
That is weird. Can we step outside of the nightclub, please?
I don't know why that's the new trend. Everything has to have a deep beat when you do an interview. So now, looking back on it, she could tell that, you know what? I guess I can see why people thought that was so weird. But we talked about this with Ralph on Friday, how this this Doug guy, this actor who's been in the Green Mile, and he's done, you know, several, he was on Lost. He's had some pretty high-profile roles. It does seem like nobody wanted to have anything to do with him just because he married this teenager. Everybody thought he was this freak show now.
Well, he was.
And she admits that basically she became his whole world because he lost everything. Friends, family members, work. I mean, talk about setting yourself up for a stressful relationship.
Yeah. No kidding.
How do you not feel responsible for that? You know what I mean?
That's too strong a boner right there.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what that is. So what happens to Courtney Stodden next, you guys? What do you think she does next? Will we never hear from her again, or is she going to figure out some way
she's
to stay in the limelight?
She's going to be on every reality show you can think of.
I would say porn as a joke, but didn't she like alternate between, hey, look at my cans, and
yes,
God is wonderful?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It was so weird. Like, she's schizophrenic or something like that.
Exactly.
Movies over the weekend. Thor made all the money, $86.1 million. Jackass came in second at $11.3 million. Freebirds, unexplainably, $11.2 million. Las Vegas, $11.1 million. How was that, Bean? How was Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ender's Game, $10.3 million. Gravity's still hanging in there with $8.4 million. 12 Years a Slave came in seventh at $5.6 million. Then Captain Phillips, About Time, and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too.
How was Thor? Did anyone see it?
I saw it, and I loved it.
Oh, good.
Yeah? Loved it, yeah. And Natalie Portman, by the way, she's
a good deal.
She really is better than a good deal.
How's Kat Dennings in the movie?
Great.
Because you know she's my girlfriend.
She's the comic relief, and you would love her.
I do love her. Yeah. I love her so. Chuck Lorre is back in the news. You guys know him. He's the mega wealthy producer of hits like, well, Two and a Half Men is his. The Big Bang Theory is his. He's also famous, and we had him on the show, as a matter of fact, talking about this. Those vanity cards that he puts at the end of all of his shows, you have to kind of freeze frame if you want to read them, but it's a whole screen full of text. And he writes those things himself at the end of every show. And sometimes it's stories, sometimes it's in-jokes, sometimes he's complaining about something. It's just crazy. It's like his 1 second on TV every week that he gets a chance to do whatever he wants. And they ended up collecting them all in a book and putting them out. We spoke with Mr. Lorre last year. Well, he's making some news because he wrote an open letter to the guys working on the 405 freeway last week.
Love it. I'm tired of those people as well.
How long has that construction been going on, by the way? It seems like 2 years, right?
I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say 3 or 4 years. Right. I mean, it's just been...
in stages, yeah.
It's hard to remember before they started construction.
Right, so things are always closed. Yes. It's supposed to go on until September. And Lisa, what is it they're doing? They're widening the road and they're firming up kind of the exit ramps and things like that.
They're making the ramps, the on and off ramps, bigger. But they're also earthquake, when you say showing up, earthquake retrofitting, gotcha, everything.
Well, here's what Chuck wrote to the guys on the 405 freeway. In fact, that's what it says at the top of the title card. Dear guys working on the 405 freeway. How's it going? Mm-hmm. I only ask because you started work over 5 years ago to add more lanes and, well, there aren't any. I've also noticed that on most days you're not actually doing anything. Is it possible you've grown bored with the project? I certainly would understand that. I've got more than a few half-finished scripts sitting on my desk. Of course, when I blow off my job, millions of commuters aren't, how should we say, fornicated. Hey, maybe we should call it the Fornication 05 Freeway. Regardless, I just want you to know that I'm rooting for you to complete your Herculean task and cut the ribbon on what will undoubtedly be a meaningless effort to ease traffic. I'd also like to offer up a few suggestions. For my untrained eye, you appear to be understaffed. By the way, have you ever noticed how often, and no offense to Caltrans, but how often you drive by a construction site and there's one guy doing work and 11 guys standing around watching the one guy do the work?
Yeah. And the one guy's not doing much either, but the other ones aren't doing anything.
Right.
I don't know. I don't understand that either.
So Chuck continues, perhaps you might consider hiring a few thousand more guys and work round-the-clock shifts instead of, you know, when you feel like it. Also, to avoid angry commuters flipping you off, how about giving them a heads-up when you close off a ramp for no apparent reason? Maybe a few miles in advance instead of 100 yards. And finally, I need to ask a small favor. Several times a week, I crawl along the old Fornication 05 with a bladder that is near to bursting. How about we work out a system where I and other urinary challenge drivers get to pull over and share your porta potties? Maybe we can repay you for your hospitality by bringing you fresh magazines to read while you're in there working. Sincerely, Chuck Lorre.
Oh my God, I couldn't agree with him more.
It won't do any good, but I'm sure it felt pretty good for Chuck to get that off of his chest. I think it's very funny.
TMZ.com has a story about Miley Cyrus, and I would be surprised if it was something else, but apparently she is in Amsterdam, and she keeps hitting up a joint called the Greenhouse.
Hitting up a what, Kevin?
A joint!
See?
The report is that she looks a bit giggly and glassy-eyed upon leaving the place.
Well,
she's in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Allowed.
That's what you're supposed to do.
It's, leave her alone.
It's not allowed. It's you're forced by law to partake. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
She's just being Miley, you guys.
Right. She's just being an Amsterdamian or whatever you call those people.
Today's celebrity birthdays. How about Brittany Gastineau? Now, who is she? Is she a Real Housewife? I want to say she's a Real Housewife. Does that sound right?
She sounds like Mark Gastineau's wife.
She was.
Yeah, I don't know if she's on one of the...
She is 30 years old today. From Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, Carson Kressley turns 44 today. Vinny from the Jersey Shore is 26 today. Calista Flockhart, Mrs. Harrison Ford, turns 49. Man, she used to be an actress, by the way. Remember when she used to have a career, was on TV all the time?
Yeah, she doesn't do a lot.
Before she married Mumbles.
Actor Stanley Tucci from The Hunger Games is 53. But the reason we celebrate today, who's turning 39 today?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's right, the great Leonardo DiCaprio. He's having a birthday today, and that is the show. Who was watching Fox yesterday morning, Fox Sports Live, the 9 o'clock show that they do, that NFL pregame show that they do, with Jay Glazer sitting down with Richie Incognito of the Miami Dolphins?
Oh, I was not. This is the guy that sent all the texts and was bullying.
This is the guy. He's a guard for the Miami Dolphins. Sorry, Chip. He's the one who's been involved in this bullying against Jonathan Martin, a teammate who left the Dolphins on October the 28th. Now, Jonathan Martin has not spoken to anybody, and this is the first sit-down interview Richie Incognito has done. And it's fascinating. I was very impressed with Mr. Incognito yesterday because, you know, just what I've seen in the press, the guy just sounds like a moron. Just sounds like a big bully meathead. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he sits down and he makes an interesting point of view. I was a little bit surprised to hear the first thing that came out of his mouth, though.
You can ask anybody in the Miami Dolphins locker room who had John Martin's back the absolute most, and they'll undoubtedly tell you me.
Now, that's not exactly what I expected to hear. That's kind of the opposite of what we've been hearing in the news recently. But he goes on to explain.
John never showed signs that football was getting to him, the locker room was getting to him.
You're saying you don't know what led to this. Your teammates are saying we don't know. His side has clearly said we do know. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there's bullying involved. There was a voice message left. I'm going to read it to you. You did leave this voice message.
Yes, I did leave this voice message.
And it's, hey, what's up, you half and word piece of black. I saw you on Twitter. You've been training 10 weeks. I want a blank in your mouth. I'm going to slap your blank mouth. Going to slap your real mother across the face. Laughter. You're still a rookie. I will kill you.
Now, that's the guy who, more than anyone in the Miami Dolphins locker room, had Martin's back.
Yeah, sure. Of course. I love to hear that guy read it, too. It's just awesome.
Look, I'm not condoning any kind of bullying at all, but we know what it's like to have somebody read a transcript of something that's been said, either on or off the air. We know what that feeling is like, don't we?
And you know what it is? Never funny.
Never funny.
No matter what
never
you
funny.
Meant.
No matter how funny it was at the time, never funny when they read it back.
You hear that. Going back to that now, do you look at that and say, I left that for Jonathan Martin?
When I see that voicemail, when I see those words come up across the screen, I'm embarrassed by it. I'm embarrassed by my actions. But what I want people to know is the way Jonathan and the rest of the offensive line and how our teammates, how we communicate, it's vulgar. It's not right. When the words are put in the context, I understand why a lot of eyebrows get raised, but people don't know how John and I communicate to one another. For instance, a week before this went down, Jonathan Martin texts me on my phone I will murder your whole effing family.
So it sounds to me like they got along great.
Good times in Miami, huh?
Wow.
Now, I was really surprised. There's so much more we just don't have time for here. I was really surprised to hear one of the things that came out of the interview that I did not know is that there had been communication between Richie Incognito, the man we're listening to speak now, and his former teammate, Jonathan Martin, who allegedly, you know, as the story has been reported, left the team because he could not handle the bullying that he was getting from Incognito and others. This really surprised me.
When John left the team on Monday, we played a game on Thursday. I spoke with John on Friday.
But you spoke with him?
I texted with him. I spoke with him through text message. And he texted me and said, I don't blame you guys. I blame some stuff in the locker room. I blame the culture. I blame what was going on around me. And when all this stuff got going and swirling and bullying got attached to it and my name got attached to it, I just texted him as a friend and was like, what's up with this, man? And he said, it's not coming from me. I haven't said anything to anybody. And I'm like, you know, okay.
Are these big texts you'd be willing to share?
No question. I'll give you, after this interview, I'll give you my phone and we'll walk through all these texts.
Okay.
And I will show you the framework of a friendship.
If Jonathan Martin was sitting right here next to you, what would you say to him?
I think I'd give him a big hug right now because we've been through so much and I'd just be like, dude, what's going on? Why didn't you come to me? If he were to say, listen, you took it way too far. You hurt me. I would just apologize and explain to him exactly what I explained to you. And I apologize to his family that they took it as malicious, but
no,
I never meant it that way.
By the way, Incognito did turn over his phone to Jay Glazer after the interview, and they went through those texts, and that is almost exactly what Jonathan Martin wrote to him, which is, I don't blame you. It's not your fault. It was the culture in the locker room, and I just needed to get away from it. So that does change things a little bit. If those are the words that are coming from the guy who we are kind of blaming Incognito for running off the team, if he's saying it's not him at all.
It could easily be him and this guy not want to confront him about it.
I suppose, yeah.
But having said that, and I know this isn't going to be very popular, look, I would imagine every NFL team has that sort of stuff going on. It's all meatheads.
Right. It's the locker room mentality. It's the definition of the locker room mentality.
Now, maybe this went a little further than most, but I would guess most of the other people in the NFL are going, what's happening? Why is someone talking about this?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, as a result of this interview, and it's not a complete rehab, there's a lot of discovery still ahead. I mean, to me, it doesn't sound like a bullying situation. It really does sound like a guy who just got tired of the culture of how everybody talks to everybody in that locker room.
And the point that he never said anything to anybody?
Right,
exactly. That's a problem. You have to at least lodge a complaint.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I got to tell you, if the point of Richie Incognito going on the TV yesterday, and the interview was just taped Saturday at the Beverly Wilshire, if the point was to begin rehabbing his image, I didn't know that much about him before other than what I've seen in the reports of others talking about him. I think it worked for me. I'm certainly, you know, my mind is certainly open as to what really went down in that locker room. Interesting story still unfolding, though. We'll keep you posted here on K-Rock.
Dolphins do play the Buccaneers tonight, and the Buccaneers are winless.
All right.
So go Dolphins, I guess.
So I'm watching Sons of Anarchy the other night, like I do, and the district attorney sends out a black and white, a police car, to go bring in one of the shady neighborhood suspects that they want to have a chat with. He comes in and this conversation ensues.
Thanks for coming to see me, Charlie.
Least I could do, you springing for the private car and all.
I assume you read the bad news about your business partners.
Yeah, some very creative coverage. Harvey Levin would be proud.
Harvey Levin would be proud. What they say right there on Sons of Anarchy. Hey, Harvey Levin, were you proud?
I didn't even know that. I hadn't heard that.
That's pretty cool, right?
That's pretty cool.
It is. It's always funny when you get mentioned. I mean, you are, let's face it, you are, TMZ especially gets mentioned a lot, you once in a while. You guys are part of the pop culture landscape. Like, these TV shows are operating in a reality, in a real world where TMZ exists, and it's just kind of cool when they mention you.
You know, I've got to tell you something, though. I this is like a total left turn, but this has been going on for a long time. There is a book. I mean, I feel like now I'm going to do Oprah's book club, but I promise you for 15 seconds.
All right.
it's by Bill Bryson, who's a great author, and it's called Summer of 27. And it's amazing because it's all the things that happened in the summer of 1927. You know, Babe Ruth with the craziness of Babe Ruth's life and Charles Lindbergh and the insanity there. And it's, you know, when I read it, it's like, this is just like TMZ. I mean, do you know that back in 27, there were newspapers that basically chronicled Babe Ruth's bunions?
What?
What are you talking about?
No, they would do an article on a bunion that
on
he had?
On his bunions. And there was so, people were so crazed to get information. And then there was this whole thing with Babe Ruth that he and Lou Gehrig were best friends until Lou Gehrig found out that Babe Ruth was banging his wife and that they were mortal enemies.
Look, he's Babe Ruth. He gets what he wants.
It's such a good book.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I would love that because that was the year of Charles Lindbergh flying across the Atlantic, too.
The
right?
Lindbergh stuff is unbelievable. It's so good. It's a great book.
See, Kevin and Bean Book Club Monday. Harvey Levin makes a recommendation. It's called Summer of 27.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on here in the autumn of 2013. You broke a crazy story that I can't imagine would ever happen, but this is about Charlie Sheen and the child services, I guess the guy who works with family services or something like that with L.A. County, that he has been at odds with over his kids. And now there's some talk of, them being on a reality show together? I don't even follow this one.
Well, this is insane. Charles Sophie is the medical director of the Department of Children and Family Services. And there is and it turns out, you know, Sophie is the guy who called Brooke Mueller and Denise Richards in last week to sit down and try to create some kind of peace. And he's right in the middle of all of this.
Right.
It turns out that Charlie Sheen lives in a gated community in L.A. And in that gated community, within a block or two, are also Denise Richards, Brooke Mueller, and then we found out Charles Sophie lives in that gated community.
What?
Wow. And they went back and forth, and nobody knew Sophie because he's not famous until this meeting, and Brooke Mueller looked at him and said, "Oh, my God, it's you." Well,
they're all neighbors.
And they're all neighbors. So a television production company contacted Sophie, and once our story ran last week, and said, "Huh, how'd you like to help us do a show?" And it's unclear. It sounded more like a scripted show to me. But to do a show on the craziness of, you know, what's going on with, you know, children's services and Charlie, where everybody lives in the same community. He said no.
He should say no, but...
But, wow. Only in this city can you have a situation where, I mean, literally, they all live within... It's like a one-horse town.
That's so bizarre. Yeah, I'll go check on him. He's next door.
Right.
Well, and the whole Charlie Sheen thing, as you've been covering from the beginning, Harvey, is one of the craziest child custody stories ever because his ex-wife is looking after his kids with the wife that came after her, right? I mean, that's what's weird about this.
Right, but now here's what's going to happen. Tomorrow, there's going to be a changing of the guard because Denise doesn't want to handle the kids anymore because the kids are violent toward her kids. So... So Brooke Mueller's brother is going to become the guardian while Brooke gets clean.
Wow.
But get this. The judge has now allowed the brother to move in with Brooke so the kids can be close to their school. So effectively, the twins are going to be back in the custody of Brooke while she tries to get clean, which has completely set Charlie off. And Charlie is now going insane. I mean, well, he's pissed. And he's saying, you know, this is like, what kind of a system is this? And he's calling the judge, Judge Anus. And he's...
Well, that'll help.
That's how you get on the good side of the judge.
I know.
I object, Mr. Anus.
Charlie shouldn't be allowed to have kids, though, right? I mean, we all agree on that, right?
But he has a way with words.
He does.
Yes, he does. He certainly does.
What a bizarre situation that is.
Yeah. All right, we're on the phone with Harvey Levin from TMZ.com in the newsroom right now. Let's talk about Miley just because we have to. We're contractually obligated to talk about Miley's latest thing. And she was on the MTV European Music Awards, and I guess not quite as controversial as what happened here in this country, but she did a little twerking with a little person, I understand. And do I have this right, Harvey? She also smoked a joint on stage? Did that happen?
Yep.
What's the point of that?
Well, look.
She's crazy and out of control, Bean.
let's try and put this in some context. What is the real difference between, because I can give you similarities, between Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber?
What's the real difference?
Is that Miley misbehaves and people applaud her for it? Justin misbehaves and people hate him for it?
Oh, I think Miley gets trashed a lot too. But I will say this: look, they were both child stars.
Right.
They both desperately tried to get out of the child mold.
Right.
They both have completely overplayed their hand in trying to quote act
right
like an adult. They're both like saying, "Oh my God," you know, because they don't get it. They think marijuana is the signature of being an adult, And they're just not playing it right in that sense, but they're both doing exactly the same thing.
Except for she's not quite as douchey as he is. I mean, she's not spitting on people.
That's because you find her more attractive.
Well, it's possible, but I mean, she's not spitting on people. She's not doing that kind of stuff.
She's not out graffitiing the walls.
Right.
And
what a little dick he is.
I don't know.
I'm fine with her. I just wish she was hotter. That's all.
Harvey.
See, I know it's the exact. It just comes all down to that with you.
It
guys.
Does.
But
really
let me ask
does.
You this, though, Harvey. In 2013, is it controversial for a celebrity to smoke a joint? I don't think it is.
Oh, that's it. No. I completely agree with you. So that's why I'm saying that they're not doing what they should be doing in order to prove what they want to prove. Smoking a joint is like the Macarena now.
You know, right, it's exactly.
It's 10 years old.
It's no longer hip if Miley is doing
no
it on TV,
hip.
Clearly.
It's,
right,
no,
exactly.
It's like when big fat men in state legislatures are making it legal. It's
kind of
dark.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's true.
Yeah, so she should be. What she should be doing is shocking the world by acting like an adult, right? That's what you're saying.
Exactly. And not even shocking the world, just kind of like acting like one. It's like, you know, Natalie Portman was, you know, a very young star, and then she just kind of grew into an adult. And, you know, if you do it right and your music's right and everything else, I don't know. I think you can do it better than if you do what they're doing, but the fact is we're still talking about them, which may be the end game.
TMZ Live airs at 4 p.m. on Fox, and the original TMG TV show airs at 6, also on Fox Channel 11. Harvey, you are the best, man. We always appreciate your time Monday mornings in the Kevin Meacher. Have a great week, sir.
Summer 27.
Hello, 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 6:35.
Actress Megan Boone is the co-star of The Blacklist on Monday night, along with James Spader. We'll talk to Megan coming up. What, is the ice cream truck going by? What the heck's going on here? Also, Chael Sonnen talking UFC 167 coming up on today's Kevin and Bean Show. And don't forget, we're about 45 minutes away or so from night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas Details. You will not want to miss this. It's hard to imagine that we could top night number 1, but we're going to try. We'll give you all those details on the way here on K-Rock.
First, though.
And now it's time for you to meet Kevin and Bean's Citizen of the Day.
Rachel Gossett and Frank Lucas are two people that were arrested November 3rd for public drunkenness and loitering. According to the police report, Lucas blew a .154 into the breathalyzer and Gossett a .216.
Nice.
Wow. That's heavy duty alcoholism.
That seems like that might be a little above the norm.
That's a party.
Seems like your breath might catch fire standing in the wrong place.
They were also in a truck having sex in the back of it right outside a Georgia Waffle House.
Yay! You know, I'm impressed with him.
No kidding, right? No kidding. Yeah, that guy's a stud.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like, Lisa, when your man gets a couple too many drinks.
Oh, it's the worst.
They said that the woman was so drunk that they were right outside of a fast food place, a Waffle House, and she had a cheeseburger with her, and that her reaction was to try and put the cheeseburger on as a sandal.
Well,
she tried to wear the cheeseburger as she was going to run.
Nice.
So you got to love those people, for God's sakes.
No, I got my shoes right here.
Right. That's story number one. Story number two, a 27-year-old man attempts to get a ride from the police. 11 p.m. on a Friday night, he's standing out on the street with his thumb up. Mm-hmm. Hey, somebody give me a ride. Somebody give me a ride. The cop drove past him, and he changed his thumb to the middle finger.
Uh-oh.
Because he was upset that they didn't stop and give him a ride.
Sure.
And turns out they saw that, and then they turned around and they said, hey, what's up? And they smelled marijuana and arrested him, of course, for marijuana possession.
So he basically would have been fine if he had just continued to hitchhike, but he drew attention to himself by flipping off the cops, ended up being arrested.
So the message is, if you're going to hitchhike, go ahead and use your thumb. Right. Middle finger not necessarily paying off for you. He was also wanted for unpaid fines totaling $2,800.
Wow. So the other lesson is don't be a dumbass.
Right.
Don't be a dumbass.
But that's the lesson for every Kevin and Bean Citizen of the Day.
True.
And finally, as bad first dates go, this one is hard to top. Wang Pai is the guy's name. The girl's name is Lily. They met online in China, and they hit it off well enough that they were going to meet to have sex. They had agreed, we like each other enough, let's go have sex someplace.
Okay.
So they hooked it up at a hotel. They were going to go meet for sex. Well, the husband suspected the wife, Lily. She was, of course, married and trying to have a tryst with somebody else. So the husband suspected that she was having an affair. So he followed her. And he followed her to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he followed her when she knocked on the door to meet the man that she was going to have sex with. And he said, he opened the door. And then the husband said, Dad?
Yay!
Oh,
it was his.
No.
It was his father.
She had no idea.
They had used fake names. They had used fake photos.
She'd never met him.
It was online.
Oh, my God. There's so many people that live in China. That's unbelievable.
What are the chances that that could actually happen?
A billion to one.
So the dude's father set up a sex tryst with his wife.
Three-way.
What are the chances that two people that both like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain would end up in the same motel room on the same night?
Now you know, Kevin and Bean's Citizen of the...
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. A half hour from right now. Details on the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Christmas Night number 2.
Speaking of awesome things, every day last week on the air here on the Kevin and Bean Show, we gave you tickets for the advanced K-Rock screening of The Hunger Games: Catching Fire, which is, let's face it, one of the most anticipated movies of 2013. We are so excited about this film. It opens up a week from Friday, coming up on November the 22nd in theaters and IMAX. We're going to let you see it a week from tonight, November 18th at the AMC Burbank 16. This is your very, very last chance to win the Kevin and Bean tickets for The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. If you want to go, give us a call right now at 1-800-520-1067. Callers 10 through 14, you win from the world famous K-Rock. Larry Morgan.
Hey.
Hi, Larry.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, it's good to be back, everybody.
Larry, a longtime radio guy here in Southern California.
You sounded like Mr. Rogers.
I'm just trying to force it right now.
Kind enough to help us fill in for a couple of days while Ralph Garman is off shooting a movie with the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
Well, not that much since Harvey Levin took every single story I wanted to do about 30 minutes ago.
That happens.
So we'll just chat. also, the fact that Jennifer Aniston hasn't done anything to her hair in the last 24 hours gives me very little to work with here.
That's true.
By the way, we have asked before, Larry. I'm glad you brought that up, because we have asked before, how is it possible that Jennifer Aniston is on the cover of 5 magazines every single week, year in, year out? And it's phenomenal what the level of interest must be in her that she continues to sell in that volume. And what do you think that's about?
And so much of it has to do with her hair. I mean, it's just the simplest thing, like changing her hairstyle. And that goes back to the heyday of Friends when everybody was getting... The Rachel. And
but she is a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of beautiful women, and they, for some reason, she is unbelievably out in front as far as interest.
It is. She has great hair. What are you kidding about this?
But don't other people have great hair?
No.
But it's not even that. It's just any move she makes in any relationship she has, and she's not even that high profile. She's not doing that many movies that do that well anymore, and yet. You're right. She's a staple.
She's not out of nightclubs.
She's not giving these interviews. It's not like she's asking for the publicity. They write about her against her wishes every week.
And take pictures of her sitting around her house if they can get. I don't get it either.
Huh.
I mean, she's a nice lady and everything.
Sure. Beautiful.
Hey, leave Jennifer alone. Can we just say that? Leave her alone. Meanwhile, we've got plenty of things going on with Kim and Kanye. Kimye. As the kids call him.
Sweet.
Because, A, she has a baby, and it's the cutest baby ever.
Sure.
And they're getting married, so it's just going to be a nonstop stream of her tweeting about how adorable her baby is.
Yes.
And how she can't wait for the big nuptials.
And did you see who was planning the entire wedding?
No.
Kanye.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Not her.
No, but she does get to plan other things. They were actually out over the weekend looking at a giant piece of land to apparently buy another compound somewhere, so they have a different place to go.
They only buy compounds.
They were walking around a 30-acre piece of land somewhere in L.A. They were sighted there. And then Kim posts a photo on Twitter, on Instagram, actually, of a huge inflatable slide sitting behind a pole and writes, slide? Check. Dance floor? Check. Mechanical bull? Check. Our party for no reason is almost ready. Is it? Doesn't that just kind of sum up their whole relationship?
Yes,
for
it
no
does.
Reason?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
By the way, I'm no real estate mogul here, but how do you find 30 acres in L.A.?
I don't.
That's a good question.
What part of the county is that going to be in?
They're certainly not moving to Bakersfield.
No. Lancaster. There's going to be
could
a
be.
Big old compound, the mm-hmm. Kimye compound. Also, this is a ridiculous side note, but fans of Beyonce have started a petition online to have Beyonce boycott Kimye's wedding for some reason. And so far, the petition has gotten 384 signatures.
All right. Wait, why do people want them to fight?
I don't know.
It's
just a fan thing.
Is it because Kanye went on stage when Taylor Swift won and said something about Beyonce?
That was pro Beyonce.
You're looking
though.
For logic in
yeah,
any of
good
this?
Point. Sorry, my bad.
This is fans.
My bad.
This is a rough story to talk about on Veterans Day, but there is a follow-up to it. Tom Cruise, who's been doing that deposition in that lawsuit about how he abandoned his kids, they're actually pulling some pretty prime stuff from this, like he admitted that Katie Holmes wanted to get the kids out of there, away from the influence of Scientology.
Right.
A quote that was going around this weekend was Tom saying that when he's on location shoots, like in the Middle East, it's just like serving a tour in Afghanistan. That's what it feels like, he says. And certainly on this last movie, it was brutal. It was brutal, he says.
Yeah.
So that made the rounds all over the weekend, and people just shaking their fist at Tom going, you know it's nothing like this. Well, of course, what happens is that it was taken out of context. His lawyer says, look, there was a whole other section of the deposition that wasn't publicly released yet that says Tom is being asked, do you believe the situations being in a movie and fighting a war are the same? And Tom replies, oh, come on. Of course, saying, right. No, it's not the same. So they're trying to kind of downplay that little message there from Mr. Cruise.
And let me add to that, Larry, because I saw the same story as you did over the weekend where people were blasting Tom Cruise. And the genesis of this story was that Tom Cruise was being – people were complaining, hey, you're away from your kids so much. You don't see your kids every 2 weeks like you're supposed to, like you have the your ability to. And it's because he's overseas. It's because he's filming a movie. And his attorney said, if you're going to criticize people for being not able to see their kids because they're around the world working, then the same criticism would apply to men and women of the military.
Yes.
Because sometimes they just physically, they're too many miles away to be able to see their kids every other weekend. That was the comparison that was made between Tom's job and a military job.
Not to mention being in a place where you probably don't want kids around, if it is really that harsh of an environment. So, yeah. So, but I'm sure they're still going to continue to kind of release little snippets from that.
Sure.
That make us want to hate them.
What does Jennifer Aniston think about it, though?
Good point.
More importantly,
get an answer on that.
What does her hair think about it? George Clooney's got a great story in a nice long interview in the new Esquire magazine for the December issue where he subtly disses Leo DiCaprio's basketball skills, in which he says that he was playing basketball, about to play a game with DiCaprio and some dudes in Cabo San Lucas, and all of DiCaprio's boys were talking major S about how good they were going to be and how well they were going to play. And a buddy of Clooney sidles up to him and says, you know we're going to kill these guys, right? Because they can't play at all. So these 50-year-old guys beat Leo's boys 11-0, 11-0, and 11-0.
Wow.
Yeah, and Clooney says the discrepancy between their game and how they talked about their game made me think of how important it is to have someone in your life to tell you what's what. I'm not sure if Leo has someone like that.
Yeah. Oh, no, he didn't.
I know. And then he goes on, did you realize that George Clooney and Russell Crowe have been having kind of a little celebrity spat over the last couple of years?
No, yeah. I did not know that.
I don't think so, no.
Russell Crowe came out at one point and said, I don't do ads for suits in Spain like George Clooney or cigarettes in Japan like Harrison Ford and Robert De Niro advertising American Express. Crikey! It's not the first time he's...
Nice.
It's not the first time he's disappointed me. So Clooney strikes back and says, he picked a fight with me. He started it for no reason at all, saying that Clooney, Ford, and De Niro are sellouts. So Clooney put out a statement saying, he's probably right. And I'm glad he told us, because Bob and Harrison and I were also thinking about starting a band, which would also fall under the heading of a bad use of celebrity, which is an obvious knock at Russell Crowe for being in that terrible band and continuing to play terrible music for
10 feet of grunting or whatever the hell that is.
How is George Clooney so good at everything, including smack talking?
Yeah, no kidding. And he does it in a snazzy, kind of classy way. I like that
guy. He's better than all of us.
Downton Abbey, huge ratings for their finale last night in the UK. And for those of us who are fans of it, and I say that for Bean and Lisa and my wife.
Yeah.
They're coming back for a fifth season. And we get the season premiere of the fourth season that just wrapped up January 5th on Masterpiece.
I'm so excited.
Don't think I don't already have that in my DVR.
Oh, I figured. Leo DiCaprio celebrated his birthday in New York with 2 Chainz. And, oh, somebody else. I totally forget who else. Here it is. 2 Chainz and Kanye were celebrating at Tao in New York City last night, and they did a version of Happy Birthday for him.
That's not good.
Yeah. Happy Birthday, Leo. Demi Moore is 51 today. New York Giant Victor Cruz is 27. Vinny Guadagnino from Jersey Shore, 26. Great actor, Stanley Tucci. Everything he's in, he's good. Including The Hunger Games.
That's true.
53. Calista Flockhart, formerly Ally McBeal, currently Mrs. Harrison Ford, is 49. And Senator Barbara Boxer.
Woo!
I just wanted to see if she got a bill. I don't know.
Nope.
73 today.
She parties.
I'm Larry Morgan in for Ralph Garman. There's your showbiz.
Details on night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas.
Very excited. Muggs, you won't be there, obviously. You'll be dead by then.
Yeah.
By Acoustic Christmas, right?
Yep.
That's coming up December 7th, the weekend of December 7th. Muggs is in trouble, you guys. And before we hear how he dug himself into this incredibly deep hole by gambling, I thought we might try to cheer him up for a minute. If we have Kevin and Bean listeners out there who have also fallen under the spell of making horrible football bets, or whatever it is you gamble on.
Yeah.
If you gamble and you have found yourself way in the hole, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. I'm looking for people who have been $5,000 down, $10,000 down.
Sure.
$20,000
sure.
down.
Easy.
Whatever you've been, if you've been down a huge amount of money gambling, we want to find out how you got into that position and what you did to get out of it. Because Beer Mug is looking for some advice.
I'm going to give you some backstory, because if Beer Mug did it, we wouldn't get to the announcement for Acoustic Christmas until about 9:20. he bets on football, and he bets basically 3 games at a time. And he was $800 down last week, and said, by the way, I don't know how I'm going to pay the $800, but after last weekend's bets, I'll be square, I'll be fine. He lost another 200, so now he's down 1,000. So what did he do this week? Bet on?
Well, hold on, let me guess. He went out and got another job, a part-time job, so he could start making some extra money to pay back his bookie, right?
That's what he did. Don't be ridiculous.
Is that what happened? That's a responsible thing to do.
Absolutely not, because you can't pay $1,000, so you're going to have to at some point start chipping away.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what did you do this past weekend to get yourself out of the hole?
So, 9 a.m., wake up. Do a 5-team parlay. Tennessee, Indy, Seattle, Denver, New Orleans.
Those of you that don't understand that means if 4 of them come through but not the 5th, you lose.
Now, I took Tennessee, Indy, Seattle, Denver, all straight up wins. All they got to do is win. They don't have to cover any spread.
Right.
They have to just win.
Let me just back up, though, before we talk about your specific picks. So your answer to gambling yourself into a hole that you can't get out of is to gamble.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
And let me stop you right there and ask this, Muggs. You know the reason these parlays, the odds are so good, is because they're so difficult to win, right?
Well,
to get 5 things to happen.
I understand that. But I usually know how to pick them.
Right. As seen by your giant hole that you can't
dig out.
It's
always 1 or 2 teams in my parlay that F me up.
That's the point.
If I do like a 6-team parlay, I usually hit 4 out of 6, which I'm like, damn.
What can you get paid for that?
For
4 out of 6.
Nothing.
All right.
Nothing.
Then stop thinking you're good at it.
Well, Muggs, you know what you are? You're the guy who buys lottery tickets and goes, but I had 2 of the numbers on the lottery ticket.
Right.
Why didn't I win? Why didn't I get the other 4? It's because it's hard. That's how the lottery stays in business. That's how your bookie is living in a nicer house than yours.
Well, here's the thing. Tennessee and Indy, they're both bad. Indy was supposed to be a lock. They lost. So I lost that parlay. What do I do? Okay. Let me try to make up for the first parlay I made for $200, or I bet for $200. I put New Orleans back up on my ticket for a straight-up win, and I took the over in that game. And then I took Denver minus 7, and then I took San Francisco straight up. That's my second parlay of the day.
Okay.
$200 more.
All right.
Okay.
How'd that go?
Everybody covered but San Francisco.
Really? It wasn't 100%?
No.
Oh.
Because I hit three out of four.
How much you win?
Three out of four.
What do you get for three out of
nothing.
Four?
Nothing.
Oh, So now you're down
$1,400, Kevin.
And you couldn't, when it was so 800, you were panicking.
Yeah. So at this point, I was like, 800, 14, what the hell? I'm in the hole.
Yes.
Let's try to get it back.
Yes.
I mean, at this point,
the beauty of beer mug.
It's just, at this point, you know, what's the difference? So what do I do? Last $100 on my line. Last $100. The only game left is New Orleans, right. Sunday Night Football.
Right.
And I said, well, I still have the good hunch about it. So what do? I take the over again, mm-hmm. and I take New Orleans straight up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough money. That's not going to make me enough money for my $100 bet. It's only going to make me $300.
Right.
With the odds. So what do? I go to NHL.
Yes, start betting on another sport.
I go to another sport.
Good.
And teams that I have no idea how they're doing.
Good.
But they look good on paper. Great. So I take Chicago minus the 1.5. They're favored by, they have to win by 2 goals.
Right.
Take Chicago. I take San Jose minus 1.5.
Listen to him ramble on. Yeah, crazy, man.
Honestly, he's like a heroin addict right
now.
Talking about how he's got to get that fixed.
Here's the thing that you don't understand. The details of all these bets are irrelevant. What happened with every single one is you lost. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all. So how much do you owe now?
$1,500.
And how are you going to pay that?
It was $8.
Well, hang on a second. Before you go any further, Ryan is on the line. Then we need to take a quick break. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Good morning, Kevin Bean. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
You're betting in the NFL. How much do you owe?
NFL, right now I'm setting at around $4,700 loss. That may not seem like a loss, but I am just a recently divorced young Las Vegas, so that's trouble.
So, all right, so $4,700 is trouble for you.
Now, Muggs is going to be there with you with that exact amount in about a week, son. You know that, right?
Right. As a matter of fact, like I said, originally at the beginning of the season, doing a lot of really dumb parlays like Beer Mug, mm-hmm. I was standing at around 89. But I've been working myself out slowly.
That's the difference between you and Muggs. He's working his way deeper.
So Ryan, you've been doing like just two-team parlays, two-pick parlays?
No. Don't go for the parlays. Just go for the straight-ups. Over-under.
Okay.
Get yourself a little math in there. Look at the NFL set. Just try to come back slowly.
I think Ryan's right, and I think I agree, and I think Bean agrees, that what you need to do now is continue to gamble.
Yes.
You'll get yourself out.
Well, see, here's the thing, Kevin. I could either do that or take out a cash advance on my credit card for 23% interest.
Both good ideas.
But let me ask both of you guys this. Ryan, let me ask you this. You listen to the show, right? You hear Cousin Sal on our program every Friday. I don't know anyone in the world who knows more about football than Cousin Sal is, yet he's still wrong as much as he's right in picking the games. It's not an easy way to go. You know that, right?
That is true. But the thing is, I'll be honest, I tend to go opposite way of Sal sometimes, and that's when I end up winning big. So I like to do that
too. All right. You're incorrigible.
How'd you do this weekend, Ryan? How'd you do this weekend?
You know what? San Francisco killed my parlays.
See?
Yeah.
I would have been out of the hole.
Why are you outraged?
Because I hate this.
Then stop making parlays where you have four or five parts that have to come through.
Yeah, I'm getting a little greedy. I want to get out of the hole on one ticket. That is
true.
Here's
what I would do if I was you. I would bet the whole $1,500 this week.
Wow.
I would put it all on one thing.
On like a lock?
On a lock. And then boom, you'll make like $600 and you'll start working your way back out.
But here's the problem, Kevin. Vinny Knuckles only approves me for $500.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. We got to take a break because we got the Acoustic Christmas announcement. Muggs, what are you doing about tonight? Are you looking at Miami Tampa?
I'm not touching that game. It's anybody's game on that one. I don't like that game.
But you could get back out of the hole. I think you should put some money on it. Yeah, you should put some money on it.
Vinny Knuckles is going to be pissed.
Yeah, I know.
Ooh, now.
You mean now?
The 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. All aboard for the Shrine Auditorium. Evening 2, Sunday, the 8th of December.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love sent to me.
Arcade Fire. Phoenix.
Till you're
announced. Lord.
And we'll never be royal. Royal. We live in cities you'll never see on screen.
K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas.
The neighborhood.
It's too cold. I wake up, I'm afraid. Watch as the good folks in capital cities entertain our troops.
Fits in the tantrums. Portugal the man. Bastille. Atlas Genius.
The 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. Evening number 2. Exclusive K-Rock Street Team on sale Friday. Proceeds benefit the Al Wooten Jr. Heritage Center. This festive celebration is the Cat's Meow.
Would we call it the Cat's Meow?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know why all these promos were done in the 1920s. I don't know. Look, we have been eagerly anticipating this morning's announcement of night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. It's Sunday, December 8th at the Shrine Auditorium. I'm happy about every band on this lineup.
Too.
But I got to tell you, I was really, really hoping for Arcade Fire. And that makes me so very happy to know that they are going to be headlining night number 2 along with Phoenix.
You know, it's funny.
Neighborhood.
Arcade Fire and Phoenix both headlined Coachella.
I know. It's insane that they're going to be in one tiny stage in one tiny venue for us. It's insane. The Neighborhood, a great live band. Capital City, so much fun. Lord, who's gotten to see Lord? Nobody's gotten to see Lord. She just played a tiny, tiny little place last time she came through. Portugal, the man, Fits in the Tantrums, Atlas Genius, and one of my favorite new bands of 2013, Bastille. It's a great lineup for night number 2. Exclusive K-Rock Street Team on sale for night number 2 is going to be this Friday. We're doing it exactly like last week. This Friday at noon, if you're a Street Team member, make sure you are. Get your pass. Password. It's free to sign up, and then you get to buy tickets when they go on sale at noon on Friday. But that's a hell of a lineup for night number 1 and night number 2. So excited about both nights this year.
Those of you just rubbing the sleep out of your eyes because you're stoners and you just woke up one more time.
The 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. All aboard for the Shrine Auditorium. Evening 2, Sunday, the 8th of December.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love sent to me.
Arcade Fire. Phoenix.
Wait till you're announced.
Lord.
And we'll never be royal.
Christmas.
The neighborhood.
It's too cold. I wake up, I'm afraid.
Watch as the good folks in capital cities entertain our troops.
Fits in the tantrums. Portugal the man. Bastille. Atlas Genius.
The 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. Evening number 2. Exclusive K-Rock Street Team on sale Friday. Proceeds benefit the Al Wooten Jr. Heritage Center. This festive celebration is the Cat's Meow.
Kevin and Bean Show, as we do, we like to play songs from the bands that we just announced are going to be playing night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. That is Arcade Fire, and a new album is out. It's fantastic.
Yes.
Oh, I love them so much. Arcade Fire is going to be on the bill that night, December 8th at the Shrine Auditorium, the second night of the Almost Acoustic Christmas this year. Phoenix is playing. Also, the neighborhood, capital cities, Lord, Portugal, the man, Fitz and the Tantrums, Atlas Genius, and Bastille. Tickets are going on sale for Street Team members this Friday at noon. You can get all the details on that and the now sold out night number 1 at krock.com. And by the way, as we get a little bit closer, of course, we will be giving you a chance to win those tickets right here on the radio as well. So definitely, if you don't buy them, that doesn't mean you can't go.
Sometimes we repeat bands. One band will be on each night, and there'll be a repeat, but not this time. This time it's two completely different lineups.
Megan Boone joins us in about 20 minutes from The Blacklist here on The Kevin and Bean Show. Andrew Siciliano next hour from the NFL Network as well. But first, I got a question for you guys. What's up with Florida?
You goddamn people in Florida! You retarded bunch of bastards!
Florida, Florida, Florida. What's up with Florida? You always have the craziest news. What's up with you? Florida, Florida, Florida. What's up with Florida? Let's all find out what happened now in Florida.
I gotta be honest, I am not cool. Period. Additionally, next. I am not cool when a police officer pulls up behind me with his lights on. I am not the guy who takes it in stride. I'm not the guy who maintains his composure.
Well, what do you do? You start puking? What?
I just get super nervous and super worried about what it could possibly be. Kevin, I'm sure you're the exact same way, especially now that the state of California is on to you and your hideous driving.
I picture the only reason you being pulled over is for driving too slow.
That's probably true.
Well, you couldn't be
more
wrong.
Or too many dogs in the car.
I will tell you that What's Up with Florida begins with my man Tyler Seeger. He is 19 years old. He's speeding along in a black Nissan sedan. He's in the Florida Keys there. He's passing other cars illegally, almost causing a crash with a pack of motorcycles. A deputy pulls up next to him and signals for him to stop. He doesn't pull over when the guy's behind him with his lights, so he pulls up next to him, starts waving at the guy to pull over, right? Seeger looks at the deputy, lights a cigarette, just looks straight ahead and continues to drive. This guy is cool, right?
Yeah.
Another deputy pulls up, tries to stop him, and Seeger just waves at him. It keeps on driving, just getting faster and faster.
How's it going, officer?
The deputies call ahead, and, you know, like they do, they set up spikes in his path, causing him to, you know, his tires blow out, and he has to pull over. He has to get out of the car. He's being arrested. He asked if he could explain. The deputy said, "What's up?" And he said, "You guys are all going to jail for treason for arresting me." He was charged with fleeing and eluding police, speeding and improper passing. He thinks somehow the police officers are to blame for him getting pulled over. It's kind of the beer mug syndrome.
Yeah,
a little
exactly.
Bit. It's not my fault that I'm speeding and almost causing an accident. It's your fault because you're the ones who are choosing to pull me over. I don't know how he's going to make that stick that they're going to jail for treason, but I got to give him credit for staying cool under pressure.
If I'm not positive I'm correct on this, but I believe treason does have a death penalty involved in it.
I think you're right. Yes.
Probably that's not going to stick.
So good luck with that. Well, we're getting closer to Christmas, so we might see more and more of these stories. It's the latest guy who decided to try to burgle a home by climbing in through the chimney. Now, do we think that works because of Santa Claus? Is that why people try it? Because don't most people, anyone who has a chimney, knows that it's not big enough to put a human being in, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, you know that, right? Everybody knows. I would think most people would know that you can't climb down a chimney.
I couldn't even fit my head through the opening of the chimney.
This guy's trying to break into somebody's house. Neighbors heard him screaming for help. 11 firefighters had to show up. It took nearly 2 hours to extract the 25-year-old from the chimney in Naples, Florida. Police went into the house, by the way. They saw a foot hanging down. Dirty, shoeless, dangling over the fireplace, and they had to put up a series of harnesses and pulleys to pull him out. And of course,
he'd light a fire.
He'll figure out some way to get out of that chimney if you light a fire, right?
Very quick.
It's estimated, by the way, that the man did about $5,000 in damage to the home's chimney and an additional $2,000 in damage to the home by forcing entry through the garage to remove the man. That was from the fire department. So they injured the home. There was nobody home. They injured the home, too, getting into it. So that's a big mess right there. Here's a great story about a 41-year-old Lake County man. He had warrants on him. The police showed up. He did not want to be taken into custody. This would have been a great how does the story end. What does the guy do to prevent the police, Kevin, from coming in to try to arrest him on the warrants?
He doesn't want to be taken. What does he keep him from? Keep him out. He rushes him.
You are correct. He sets fire to his own home.
Oh! Yeah! Come in now!
He set his own house on fire so that the police could not come in and arrest him. Now, I would think at some point he would think, this isn't going to end well for me. I don't have much of an exit strategy.
It's
going to
flush me out as well.
Right. Deputies called the fire department, and they did enter the residence. They pulled the man out of the fire. By the way, they also pulled out two dogs from the home. He set the house on fire with dogs in there, so they not only arrested him on the outstanding warrants, they have now added two counts of animal cruelty and a count of resisting arrest. Fortunately, nobody was injured in the case. We're doing What's Up with Florida here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Here's another one that involves the highway. This is Delian Springs, Florida. Florida. This is a guy who, well, he was very upset that his girlfriend decided that she was going to drive because he was too drunk to drive. So she took the keys away from him. They got in the car and started off, continuing to argue while he was saying, no, no, I should be driving. I'm not drunk. She says, you are drunk. You can't drive. He is Jose Perez, 25. Well, he was Jose Perez, 25.
Uh-oh.
He jumped out of the car to prove to his girlfriend that he was, in fact, not too drunk to drive. He opened the door and leapt from the moving car and was pronounced dead at the hospital.
Wait, that was supposed to show her that he was of sound mind to drive?
Yes,
well, he was drunk at the time, so he wasn't thinking straight.
Huh. It sounded like he thought he was going to get out of the car and come around and take the keys from her and take over the wheel. Yeah. Unfortunately, they were already driving down the highway at the time he decided to do that, so it did not. Not end well for the man. And finally, Kevin, I know you want to send all the old people to live on an island somewhere so they get the hell out of our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
This may be evidence for your case here. He is a grandfather who was at the school to try to pick up his granddaughter. Lawton Elementary School, he went to pick up his 7-year-old granddaughter. Usually grandma does it, but she was unavailable, so she asked grandpa to do it. He doesn't usually do it. He got a little bit confused, and he doesn't see so well, so he tried to pick up the wrong girl at the school.
No.
He's having trouble with his memory and his eyesight. He approached the wrong girl, grabbed the handlebars of her bike, put his bike in the trunk of his car and told her to get into the car.
Oh my.
She, of course, having never seen this man before, screamed and ran home and told her parents that somebody had tried to abduct her. A sketch artist came out. They put a put an image of the stranger on the TV. Grandpa's family looks at it and goes, hey, wait a minute. That's Grandpa. What happened?
I can just about walk. I can't hold a walk. I can't see too far, and I can't hear too good.
There was a neighbor, by the way, that saw Grandpa driving away with somebody else's bicycle and nobody in the car, so he picked up the actual girl that Grandpa was there to pick up and took her home, so she's fine. And Grandpa says the whole thing was just a big misunderstanding. Maybe he just doesn't see so well and wasn't exactly sure which one was his granddaughter.
Love it.
That's the beautiful thing about the Sunshine State, and that's why we ask, what's up with Florida?
Florida, Florida, Florida.
Another one of the bands playing night number 2 for the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. That, of course, is Phoenix. Arcade Fire is also playing. The Neighborhood, Lord, Capital Cities, Fits in the Tantrums, Atlas Genius, Portugal the Man, Bastille. It's going to be a great night. Tickets go on sale Friday at noon, just like last week.
Wait, the Timberwolves aren't playing? I thought the Timberwolves were playing.
No, they're playing the Clappers. According to Dave.
Why can't Dave speak English? What the hell?
How long has he been in this country?
His whole life.
Oh, wow.
His whole life. He was born here.
I had no idea.
And he doesn't speak Spanish. So why does he? I don't know.
By the way, Dave says that the Timberwolves are plural for the Timberwolves. So at least we got that sorted out.
That's accurate.
Ralph Garman is out for a couple days doing showbiz real-life movie-making things. In the meantime, filling in on the beat this hour is our good friend Larry Morgan.
Thank
hey, Larry.
You.
What's going on, man?
Well, Miley Cyrus is all over the internet this morning. What a surprise, because she did something shocking, question mark?
Controversial,
yeah.
Question mark?
MTV's Europe's version of the MTV Video Music Awards aired, and she went up on stage, twerked with a dwarf, mm-hmm. What else is new? And then, in a direct quote from the USA Today, opened the show singing We Can't Stop while wearing a silver spandex suit and gyrating her buttocks in the move known as twerking. Thank you, wow. USA Today.
They're getting awfully hip over there at the paper.
I know.
Gyrating her buttocks.
They're stepping up their game.
What's
for their
happening?
60-plus crowd. But then, while she accepted the award for Best Video for Wrecking Ball, she shocked everyone or no one by lighting up a cigarette that, word has it, contained the demon weed.
No, she didn't. How could she?
That is outrageous.
Now, considering the awards were held in Amsterdam, and considering the lax laws there regarding drug use recreationally, probably no big deal. Yeah. But by the time they actually aired the show here in the United States, they cut away from that moment and just showed a wide shot of the crowd instead of her lighting up the cigarette.
Well, that... all of our children would be ruined if they were to show that on.
Especially from the network that gave us Big Tip Texas, Snooki and JWoww, Teen Mom 1, 2, and 3, and 16 and Pregnant. So thank God we didn't see that.
Right.
Also, I have to mention, several hours prior to hitting the red carpet for that show, Cyrus tweeted a naked selfie, because why not? When
sure.
You're getting ready. We all do that.
Why not? Because she has Justin Bieber's body. That's why not.
And I love what she wrote. I got that shower time selfie.
Oh, go away.
Lots on Charlie Sheen right now. He was a very busy man over the weekend, especially in the Twitterverse. In the midst of this whole child custody hoo-ha, he's actually trying to do something positive, and that is make up with his old boss, Chuck Lorre.
Really?
Yes.
This is the guy that he was screaming about when he went crazy.
Back in 2011, he went bananas against Chuck Lorre and Warner Brothers Television about the terrible job they were doing, and on and on and on. Well, he reached out, and what better way to reach out and try and make amends and soothe old wounds than to tweet about it?
Sure, yeah.
So he tweeted to Chuck Lorre that he'd like to make amends and that he has a, quote, idea he wants to pitch him, which I will do in person, he added. That tweet, the positive one, follows one that he issued earlier on Sunday in which he may have violated a gag order a judge placed on him not to talk about the custody war he's in. And I got to read this verbatim, if I may, because okay. It's just this is a string of tweets. So let me see if I got this straight. My twin boys are now in harm's way and in grave danger, being raised by a gaggle of incompetent and lascivious marionettes, all ruled and fooled by an Adderall-snorting husk called Brooke.
Whoa.
And guess what, Judge Anus Brain?
Yeah!
You may have gagged me temporarily, but mark my unspoken words. Anything happens to my boys, and you will get to know who I truly am. And this means being jailed for loving and trying to protect my children? Then go for it. I have as many friends on the inside as I do out
yeah,
here.
Yeah, Judge Anus, what do you think of that?
Wow. Dang.
Does Charlie Sheen only communicate through Twitter? Is that it? He never visits anyone in person, never picks up the phone. It's all just whatever he types in 140 characters or less.
Unfortunately, that's the way that most of the world is going.
Sure.
It doesn't exist unless you put it out to the rest of the world. The next court hearing is set for December 4th, and I have a feeling that will come up, I think.
Did you, in fact, write this, Mr. Sheen? Did you actually call me Judge Anus?
I got hacked. That's the best response you can give. We were talking about Hunger Games Catching Fire coming out soon, and I love Jennifer Lawrence.
I do, too.
Not just because she's a great actress and she's a lovely woman, but she has no problem saying what's on her mind.
Love that.
And it's not stupid. She's just real, and she's talking about the wetsuits. They have them running around in this movie. It's just part of the costuming, which is always unusual in these Hunger Games movies. And she noted that she was surprised at how little camel toe problem there was in these tight wetsuits. I was expecting a lot more, she said.
Well, thanks for putting that image in our heads.
Yeah, and then her co-star, Josh Hutcherson, revealed that they did have some issues with the male version of the wetsuit. They went through the idea of cups, but that just looked stupid.
Sure.
They were going to possibly wear thongs to eliminate the VPL, but they ended up going with bike shorts, except, as Hutcherson says, those who decided to go commando and freeball it during the entire shoot. So
here's why Jennifer Lawrence is the best. Nobody was even asking about her vagina, yet she started talking about it anyway.
Has no problem bringing it up.
She's the best.
So to speak. All right. Box office, anybody see a movie this weekend? Anybody see the Thor?
I did. I saw Thor.
How is it?
I liked it a lot.
There's a good buzz on it.
Yeah, it was 75%, 80%. It was great.
Well, most of the rest of the world agreed with you. It made $86 million to take the number one spot over the weekend as expected. It's already, in one weekend, made half of its budget back. So, but look at this at number two. How great has Bad Grandpa been doing? Talk about a moneymaker.
Really well.
It made another $11 million. It's made almost $80 million. It cost $15 million to make.
Wow.
Free Birds at number three. We got the grumpy old Hangover, Las Vegas at number four. Ender's Game at five. That thing's tanking fast. Gravity still hanging in at six. And the rest of the top ten filled out with 12 Years a Slave, Captain Phillips, About Time, the romantic comedy, and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too. You've seen that one, too, right, Kevin?
I have not.
Okay. Happy birthday, Leo DiCaprio. He's got a big movie coming out on Christmas Day, The Wolf of Wall Street, or The Woof of Wall Street.
King of Mexico would say.
It really looks great. Another collaboration with Scorsese. He's 39 today.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's the guy.
That guy, too.
Demi Moore is 51. We got Victor Cruz of the New York Giants at 27 years old today. Stanley Tucci, who, if you just look at his entire IMDb list and you go, oh, he was in that? He was in that?
Yeah.
He was in that.
It's all shocking.
And he's just good in everything, is 53 today. Calista Flockhart, currently the Mrs. Indiana Jones, I think is how she's referred to, is 49. And that is your Showbiz Beat. I'm Larry Morgan, in for Ralph Garman.
Live that fantasy.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 9 minutes after 8 o'clock.
That is Lord, of course, who came in on the Kevin and Bean Show on one of her very first ever American radio interviews. She came in and performed for us back in September when she was in town for the Fonda, and we're going to get a chance to hook up with her again. Night number two of the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas, December 8th at the Shrine Auditorium. She is on the bill, along with Arcade Fire Phoenix, The Neighborhood, Capital Cities, Portugal the Man, Fitz and the Tantrums, Atlas Genius, Bastille, and all those tickets are going on sale this coming Friday at noon for K-Rock Street Team members. All right, Kevin, Monday nights at 10 o'clock, NBC, you and me, The Blacklist, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few things that we agree on.
Megan Boone is another thing that we agree on. She is the co-star along with the great James Spader of The Blacklist, and she joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Megan.
Hi, guys.
We have been waiting for this moment for months. We've been obsessed with your show. We've been so excited about it and so happy to have you on.
Oh, man, I'm so happy to be here. I didn't know until, like, 4 or 5 days ago. It's been just a crazy roller coaster ride production of the show. So.
Well, you are in pretty much every scene, it seems like.
Yeah, I am. So I work about 60, 70 hours a week. No big deal.
Now, do I have this right? Are you actually filming the show in the Washington, D.C. area?
No, most of it is shot in New York City. We shot maybe 2 days worth of footage in D.C. during the pilot, and then the rest of it's just green screen. So if you ever see the White House, then I'm just looking at a big sheet of green.
Oh, how about that?
What's that like for an actor and actress? You know, having never done it, you pretty much have to act like things are there. You have to act like people are there. Things are going on. Is that difficult?
That's kind of my job. You know, if you like me saying, Kevin, Dean, Lisa May, do you guys think that talking and having conversations are really hard?
And the answer to you would be, I, Kevin, do. Yes, I have a huge problem with that.
I mean, it's like you said, it's just something you have to get used to. I mean, you've been in the business for a while, but I mean, it's so intricate, some of these things that you're filming. I mean, I can't even believe how many action scenes they make you do. It's like, it must feel like you're shooting a movie every week when you put your hour together, with how much running around and getting shot and things blowing up and everything. It's insane that they're doing this on a small screen network show.
That's exactly right. I mean, I joked about it earlier, but this is an extremely challenging job. I mean, I get up every day and I feel like I have to be just kind of the best version of myself and a trooper, and it always feels like I'm just doing the absolute best I can, you know? You oftentimes you're on like 5-6 hours sleep maximum, you know? And then it's all very visceral. There's a lot of action, and that I've had to learn a lot of it as I go, you know? I've been taking Krav Maga and doing a lot of gun training and...
So, learning? Are you just learning TV fighting, or could you take me out?
I'm learning actual Krav Maga techniques.
She could take me out.
Then.
Yep. Wow!
Wow!
All right. Now, you're not buying this BS that your employer is trying to give you, that your husband is clean, right? You know that guy's up to no good, right?
I think that sometimes when I don't think so. I think that Liz wants to believe that she has someone in this world that she can trust and confide in, and that is there for her. It's hard because in her life there aren't very many familial ties, you know? So
right.
I think that you can live under a delusion if you need to, you know, and I think that that's what's happening with her.
James Spader, of course, is Red Reddington, and boy, is he weird. Like, I don't know, is it just in that, like, he'll be sitting there and he'll laugh at such inappropriate times, such weird, like, strange times where you go, why is he laughing? Does that throw you off sometimes?
He's magnificent. No, I mean, it's a character choice. And the best part about working with Spader is being thrown off, because you can't go into a scene with James and decide it's going to go a certain way. You know, you have to adapt and change and react, and it makes for a really spontaneous performance, you know.
Megan, we heard that he stays in character even when you guys call cut. Does he do that?
No, no.
Because he'd be a dick if he did.
I know. We were like, oh, poor Megan.
No, he's a really sweet guy. I love James. You know, I don't see red if the cameras aren't rolling.
Okay.
All right, let me ask you this then, because Red is the guy. For those of you that don't watch, he's the master criminal. He's helping Megan solve crimes, and I can't figure out if he. If he knew your dad, if he's taking care of you for his,
if he is your dad,
or if he is your dad, or if he's even further weird in love with you.
I have really good news.
Yes,
if you
please.
If you tune in tonight, you'll get answers about that.
All right, fantastic.
Oh, really? That's tonight.
Yes. Right. Tonight is the reveal. Yeah.
That is fantastic news. This is actress Megan Boone on the phone. We're talking about her hit show called The Blacklist, which airs Monday nights at 10 on NBC. It is the best new show of the fall and one of the best reviewed and just one of our very favorites here on The Kevin and Bean Show. I want to ask you about a couple other actors real quick before we let you know. Justin Kirk, he's guest starring on tonight's show. But yeah. I also read, is this true that Andrew Dice Clay is going to be making an appearance on The Blacklist? And if so, how?
He has a cameo tonight. I just want to tell you to watch and see because it's unexpected. I mean, did you see Blue Jasmine?
Yes.
No, but I didn't, but the guys did, and they said that he is incredible in it.
He is fantastic. So when I had seen it already when I heard that he was going to come on the show, and I was giddy. I couldn't believe it because I thought he was such a good actor after seeing that. And I was a baby in the 80s. I didn't know about, Little Boy Blue or all these nursery rhymes that Liddy used to have. So that was my point of reference, that Woody Allen movie. And he's really good. He's a great actor. And So we were really lucky to have him for a little bit. And Justin Kirk. He was awesome. He bleached his hair blonde for the part because he plays kind of a likable guy on Weeds,
Right.
We tried to make him a little more sinister and we gave him a unique look. And he's just like most of our villains, a little over, there's like an element of him that's Bond-like and kind of over the top, but grounded in reality because they're played by such good actors,
Like you did last week or the week before with Robert Sean Leonard, same thing. You wouldn't expect to see him in a role like that, but he was terrific.
Yeah, all these great actors that have been wanting to play villains, that haven't really gotten the opportunity because they are so sympathetic. Like Robert Sean Leonard is one of the most likable, actors out there. So, the writers are going against expectation and the creators are going against expectation in their casting choice.
Well, the good thing is in your show, there's room for a new villain pretty much every week. So there's going to be a lot of those people getting that kind of work.
Yeah, there are. Alan Alda is coming on the show.
What?
That's cool.
That's amazing.
I know.
Well, listen, we know you got to go, but I mean, that's all you can hope for as an actress is to be doing good work on a good show, and especially a show that has already been renewed for another season, so you can relax a little bit and just show up and enjoy yourself. And I hope that you are enjoying it. What's it been like being so high profile now compared to many of the other things you've done in the past? I mean, having to kind of deal with fans and getting recognized a lot. How are you handling that, Megan?
Really well.
Best answer ever.
I'm happy. I love to work hard. That's what most of this is. It's a lot of hard work. And you would think that there was a big kind of like adjustment period to that kind of thing. But I'm in New York City. People don't really bug you here that much. And I just love being a part of the fabric of New York City,
Sure.
I'm working hard. This is like the manifestation of ambition out here. All these people walking in space, like trying to make something of themselves. And, I just turned 30 years old. I'm a young woman and things are finally happening to me that I've worked my whole life for. So, I'm handling it really well.
All right. Well, we're very happy for you. We couldn't love the show anymore. Monday nights at 10 on NBC. Megan Boone, you're always welcome on the Kevin and Bean Show. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Did you guys notice the sexual tension between Megan Boone and myself?
She did all but undress you with her eyes.
That's what I saw. That's what I saw. It was a little weird, but look, who am I to deny that?
It was a little unprofessional, honestly, in an interviewee situation to come on so strong to a married man.
Thank you, Pete.
Hey, Andrew Siciliano, host of the NFL's Around the League Live on the NFL Network. How are you, sir?
Hey, everybody. Good morning.
What did we miss, right as Lisa did traffic? You were telling us we missed something big on the Miss Universe pageant.
Nothing big. The true... If you wanted to laugh at the world,
If you really wanted to laugh at what we put on television, then at halftime of Alabama-LSU on Saturday evening, which was the second NFL game of the week after the game last Thursday, then you should have flipped over to the Miss Universe pageant. They didn't even say their names.
What?
They were as it's as if they were just strippers coming to the stage.
All right.
They put their name up on the bottom of the screen, but they never once said their name. And when they introduced them walking across the stage while Fire at the Disco or
Panic at the Disco.
Panic, them too. I've heard it both ways. So they're out there playing for like 30 seconds and the guy's screaming, and then he leaves and the band keeps playing like it's a wedding in the background, and then they introduce these girls like strippers, and by the way, they're coming out from between giant poles, in bikinis.
Good.
The camera zooms into their butt. They got a handheld camera behind as they step between the poles. I'm not kidding. They zoom into their butt, hold it for 2 seconds. They don't say their name. They put it on the bottom, and they do two sentences. They say, you know, Miss Ukraine loves puppies and once helped at a shelter. That's all they say. I swear. And then they walk off the stage.
Did they take away the part that we like, which is the interview? Because they
I only watched
terrible answers?
For 10 minutes. I couldn't watch with sound on after a while.
By the way,
that pageant does sound like a Christopher Guest movie. Like they're making fun of something.
It's
right?
as if they were trying. And then I guess they had some auto sponsor, and they showed them running around the track.
Right.
Like, hey, look. And it had been pouring rain that day. Clearly, the track is wet.
Sweet.
Like, these women are going to crash these cars. That would have been television.
I think Miss Venezuela won.
Yes, she did. And that's
Felicitaciones.
I'm sorry, what was
her
name?
Not a bad deal.
No, Felicitaciones. Congratulations.
Oh, how about that? He's got that name on the tip of his tongue.
Now, Andrew, we have a lot we want to talk about, which is why we always invite you in on the Monday mornings. You're very kind to make time for us. But I have to ask, before we get into some of the actual games, did you watch Jay Glazer's interview with Richie Incognito yesterday?
I did not see all of it. I saw a good portion of it. We were getting ready for our show, but we had it on the stage.
I feel like I have been following this story fairly closely, but really it kind of turned my opinion of Mr. Incognito upside down.
How so?
To me, he said a lot of things in the interview that did not make me just believe the wholesale media interpretation, which is that he's a big mean bully who did nothing but pummel poor little John Martin. It sounds to me like it was something that everybody in the locker room was involved on, and everybody did and received equally until John Martin decided he'd had enough of it. And Martin never made any indication to anybody that he was unhappy or that he felt that he was being persecuted or that he was being bullied or anything like that. It sounds like Incognito thought they were friends. And this is just how they talk to each other, and it was a shock to him that Martin was hurt.
I don't know where to start here. I will start by saying this. There are still so many unanswered questions, and we have more unanswered questions than we actually know facts.
Okay.
I'm prepared to render
a judgment.
The idea that Richie is the big bad bully and it is only his fault and he is a monster and a this and a that is the mainstream Good Morning America kind of media angle here.
And that's what we've been seeing mostly for the last 2 weeks.
It may very well be right.
Okay.
The sports media, not to say that they're taking Richie's side, has in the last week, and you saw it last Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, kind of turned the conversation, because when the Dolphins opened up their locker room on Wednesday, to a man, those guys angrily defended Richie Incognito and lashed out against the media portraying their locker room as some kind of clown car.
Right.
They hated that.
And it was revealed in this interview with Jake Glazer that John Martin had texted Richie Incognito and said, look, I'm quitting the team. It's not because of you.
Right.
It's the culture of the locker room. It's not you. I mean, that to me absolves him of being the guy who's purely the tormentor.
And we at NFL Network had reported that about 8 days ago. Now, the thing is, though, and I'm not the shrink here, but let's get on the couch. There are many who would say that that is the classic behavior of someone who has been abused or bullied by saying, no, it's not you. They just want to flee. They don't want to confront
the
bully.
So he's telling the bully that
they
because
flee.
He doesn't want a confrontation.
Listen, here's what we do know.
Okay.
Richie Incognito has a rap sheet. All right?
Right.
Richie has come on my show around the league probably 6-7 times this season. He's trying to redo his image. Then this happened. He has a rap sheet. He was kicked out of Nebraska, kicked out of Oregon. All right. Richie had he had a stint with the Rams. They drafted him. They kind of washed their hands and said, move on. This is his third NFL team. He was voted as the dirtiest player in football in 2009.
Okay.
He is the guy that pushes buttons. He is the guy that does any and everything possible on the field for you to flip, throw your helmet at him, throw a punch, and get ejected. He is the instigator. He is the bad guy.
Is he smart or is he just a thug?
He's not a thug. He is the...
Does he know what he's doing?
He's the kid who was bullied as a kid, and he has said this, who got bigger and stronger than everyone else and doesn't know where the line is. He's the bad guy. But that doesn't mean that he is the only one who's guilty here. I don't know the nature of their relationship.
Right.
There are so many questions that are unanswered
about
their relationship.
They had 1,100 texts back and forth this season between those two. Indicates to me that they were really good friends.
There's clearly a level of friendship. Whether or not Jonathan Martin felt bullied into that friendship, only they can answer.
Right.
I mean, there are questions that need to be asked. And by the way, Jay did a great job. But there are questions that need to be asked with both of them sitting together in an interview setting, which I don't think will ever happen.
Why is Martin not speaking out?
That's a great question. He has lawyered up, so to speak, with one of the most prominent sports attorneys out there. Whether or not they're going to go after the Dolphins, the league, who knows? But he is not speaking at the moment.
Because he wants to still get paid, even though he walked away.
He would like to get paid. He would like to probably still play football somewhere. He is also seeking some emotional treatment. We don't know what kind of issues he had. I think here's the question. Did Jonathan Martin have emotional issues and Richie Incognito pushed him over the edge? Or were Jonathan Martin's emotional issues caused by Richie Incognito and the environment of the locker room? There is no easy answer. And by the way, my interaction with Richie has been positive. It's always been positive.
Okay.
We don't just talk about the Dolphins when I have them on my show.
Is that because you're a thug as well?
That is because, look at all my tats, clearly. And I'm not
Andrew's
calling 6'5",
so he's pretty intimidating.
He's a big dude. Listen.
I'm scared of him.
Earlier this year, Antonio Smith of the Texans got suspended for like throwing a helmet or something.
Right.
He got in a fight with Richie. Well, when you hear that it was with Richie Incognito, everybody in football, and I mean every last person, and this was months before this thing happened, said, well, whatever Antonio Smith did, Richie clearly deserved it.
Right.
Because that's who Richie is.
There are guys who get a reputation. Look, no one's ever going to give Chris Brown the benefit of the doubt in a fight because we know that he's a dick, right? It's the same sort of thing. Your reputation precedes you. If you're the guy who's always in trouble, it's kind of hard to defend yourself even if you're not guilty this time.
That doesn't mean that he didn't feel empowered or wasn't empowered there to do what he did to quote unquote toughen the other guy up.
All right, we got to take a break. We got to leave it there. Johnny Red Zone in studio with us here on the Kevin DeBeach Show. Our friend Andrew Siciliano from the DirecTV Red Zone and NFL Network. We'll talk some more about this past weekend, weekend number 10 of the NFL, when we return here on K-Rock.
One of the bands playing the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Christmas. We made the announcement earlier this morning. Arcade Fire, Phoenix, the neighborhood, Capital Cities, Lord, Portugal, the man, Fritz and the Tantrums. Fitz. Did I say Fritz? Fitz.
Yeah, you did.
Atlas Genius and Bastille. Tickets go on sale Friday at noon. Like usual, go to krock.com for the details.
Chael Sonnen from the UFC joins us in about 20 minutes or so right here on the Kevin DeBeach Show talking about the upcoming UFC 167. In the meantime, we're talking NFL with our friend Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone. Andrew is in a very good mood today because there was no Dana Brody on last night's Homeland.
Oh, I didn't see it yet.
You'll be happy to know no Dana Brody.
Really?
You can wait and enjoy it. No, she just wasn't on it.
Okay.
Let's talk about a couple of games that were significant over the weekend. First of all, would you ever in a million years at the beginning of the season, Andrew, imagine that we would have a game where it would be Nick Foles versus Scott Tolzien?
It was a great one, too. Yeah. Okay, can I back up? Has Dana Brody's brother ever spoken a line on camera?
Yes.
A line or two.
Really?
Not much, though.
Because he just looks like his puppy died, and he's really excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, is that weird mix of emotions?
What happens is they started off that show with too many kids in the family. They didn't have enough plot lines for both of
them. That kid serves no purpose.
That's correct.
I mean, that character serves no purpose.
So correct.
If he got hit by a car, nobody would notice it.
Correct.
All right, where was I? Scott Tolzien and Nick Foles.
Yes.
And it started Seneca Wallace and Nick Foles. And then it got to Scott Tolzien, who, backstory.
Who is Scott Tolzien? Right, what was Scott, this guy doing a week ago, and now he's the freaking quarterback of the Green Bay
Packers? Bagging groceries at Vons?
He might have been. I'm convinced that there has been only like two quarterbacks in the last 25 years of Wisconsin football. It's like Brooks Bollinger, Scott Tolzien. It's all the same guy, and they just changed names
right.
and jersey numbers, but it's the same dude. And Scott Tolzien was the latest in that long line of the same dude. He was in San Francisco for a little bit in the preseason. He went to Green Bay's practice squad. He's a guy that the Browns tried to sign off the practice squad when Brandon Whedon got hurt.
Right.
Not Brandon Whedon. I don't remember. And the Packers gave him a raise to keep him. They elevated him off the practice squad Wednesday. He wasn't supposed to play.
Can I ask you a general question? How much of this is going on? How many players are – they don't know where they're going to be next week? But
plenty,
they very well
the
could
time.
Be in the game.
I would say the bottom five spots on most NFL rosters are generally churning. Not the best teams necessarily, but the losing teams, because you're always looking for new bodies to bring in. And if a guy, I mean, this is getting too inside baseball here, but if you're on the practice squad
right.
on any team, I can steal you from that practice squad if I sign you to my real roster.
Okay.
So here, you're an intern, let's say.
Right.
I can steal you to the other station if I give you a real job. And that's what someone tried to do to Scott Tolzien last week. Thus, the Packers had to give him a real job.
Ah, to keep him.
And but, then they but had to play him. But yeah. he's not what ready.
What I think is interesting, though, is the teams that have the appropriate backups. Like Philadelphia lost their marquee quarterback, right. but had a guy who turns out to be pretty good ready to step into those shoes. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the kind of depth that you want in a professional football team. You don't want to be Green Bay right now and have Seneca Wallace hurt and have nobody to go into play, right?
And Seneca Wallace isn't even their first choice.
He's not
their
very good
choice,
either.
Right? So the Packers are screwed. They're just...
They're screwed. They're done, screwed. Right?
But imagine, look, Peyton Manning's getting an MRI today on his leg.
Right. Which he's hurt three times?
Which he's hurt something. He won't even tell you what
leg it is. He won't even tell you.
I mean, it could be his finger for all we know, but right. it looks like his leg. If they lose Peyton Manning, do you know who the backup is?
I don't.
Brock Osweiler.
Really?
Oh, he or she is good.
He or she, right. You never know.
Wow.
He's like 6'7". He played in the Pac-12, and he's not ready to take the Broncos to the Super Bowl, I'll tell you that. If Drew Brees gets hurt, who's his backup?
Tim Tebow?
No, it's one of the McCown brothers. It's the other one. It's Luke McCown.
It's the McCown you've never heard of?
Okay. If Matt Ryan gets hurt, granted their season's over anyway.
Right.
Dominique Davis is the backup.
So everybody could afford one great quarterback, and that's it, and he better stay healthy.
Basically it.
And then a season like this where they don't stay healthy, now you're all in trouble.
You're screwed. Yeah.
Who had a worse day yesterday, Andrew Luck or Colin Kaepernick?
I would say Kaepernick. Because Andrew Luck had never had a three-pick day. He faced a team. They can't protect Andrew Luck. They have no line
right.
there. And Robert Quinn and Chris Long, they're as good as you get coming off those two ends there. So they knew they couldn't protect him. He had a bad day. Tavon Austin is amazing. You just say, you know what? They whooped us and you go home.
Most quarterbacks in the NFL would have a bad day if they did not get the protection. If they got no protection like this, most can't do it.
He was beaten up.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, the Niners were at home. This was like the biggest proving ground for Carolina. They'd won a couple of games in a row. All right, this is it. Prove us you're worthy. Well, they went on the road, and they beat up Colin Kaepernick. Colin
yep.
Kaepernick, if they, they're still the jury's still kind of out on him.
Yeah.
I mean, he took him to the Super Bowl last year, but, you know, you talk to quarterbacks, and I'm not trying to get too geeky here with the football stuff, but you take away his first read, meaning, all right, he knows where he's – his first choice on a play.
Right.
Where he should throw the ball.
Right.
You take that away,
uh-huh.
he's not ordinary, if not substandard. And the Panthers – that was a huge game
yeah.
for the Panthers. San Francisco is still one of the top three teams in football. They still were going to get a playoff game at home, blah, blah, blah. But you
never know what 49ers team you're going to get, it seems like.
Well, but they had won five straight games by double digits. I mean, they were on a roll. Ever since they lost two in a row in September, they were on. They were the quietest
right.
defending conference champion in recent memory. And they got smacked around yesterday.
We're almost out of time. Our friend Andrew Siciliano in studio. NFL Around the League Live airs Monday through Friday at 3 p.m., so you'll see him this afternoon. By the way, it was weird having the Chiefs gone this weekend because I don't know anything about the Chiefs. They're they are the quietest undefeated team in NFL history, aren't they?
They are. They get the Broncos this week, too.
Oh. It seems so, like they have no superstars.
They don't, and they have 2 out of 3 games with the Broncos.
Yeah, so that's weird planning, isn't it?
Two out of the next three
regular season games.
Yeah. I mean, they're division teams. It's Carolina and New Orleans does it also coming up in December. So it's not that uncommon, but it's set up. So we find out now if Kansas City is for real. And most people think they're very good. They're a playoff team. But that, I mean, they shouldn't be this good.
Yeah. Last question. Yeah, it's no one should be 9-0. Last question for you.
Will
Tampa Bay finally win a game tonight?
Well, Tampa, if it's going to happen, it will be. Well, look, there's two ways you could look at that. If you want to go psych 101 on the Dolphins, you could say that this whole thing's been a distraction. They come out and they're not prepared and they get run over. Or you could say it's the us against the world mentality.
Let's go do what we got to do.
We're going to go prove, like, we're angry in that locker room Wednesday.
Right.
We're coming out here Monday and we're showing that we're not a bunch of pushovers and we're not the guys, whatever.
I'm picking A.
I told you the Bears last week. Did I not? Did I not tell you the Bears last week?
I believe you did, actually.
Mike is about to get his legs broken, so you need to stop interacting with him at all.
What would happen if you put, like, Nucky Thompson on Dana Brody's brother? No, wait, on Dana what? Brody. Nucky Thompson. What? I mean, if Nucky Thompson were there for Dana Brody as a parent...
I'm not sure that we've ever had a bigger left turn.
Think about that. I'm thinking Homeland.
In the history of radio.
I'll get out of here now. That
was a U-turn.
Just think about it.
Okay, we will.
Put the shows together.
Thanks for coming.
Bye.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:57.
Ralph Garman is off filming a movie for a couple of days. He will be back on Wednesday's show. In the meantime, we're taking turns filling in on the showbiz beat. And this hour, it's our old radio pal, Larry Morgan, who, by the way, can be seen Christmas Day starring alongside Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. No, Robert De Niro, excuse me.
It's hard to remember which bad one it is.
Really? Hey. Hey, which great one it is, by the way, Kevin.
That's what I meant.
That's right. I hosted a screening on campus at USC last night, and the response was... well above lukewarm.
An outstanding movie. That's what we've been told. Oh, okay. Larry Morgan is in the film called Grudge Match, opening everywhere on Christmas Day. But right now he's filling in for Ralph on the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
Well, just days and hours after tweeting about everything from being charged with vandalism for spray painting graffiti in Rio, filmed sleeping in bed by a Brazilian woman who took it viral, and then getting tummy troubles and due to food poisoning. Justin Bieber dropped a brand new track today.
All right.
And I'm not going to have you play any of it
because
it's just not very good.
Yeah.
But he's putting out a track a week every Monday for about 10 weeks as part of his Music Mondays promotion.
Now, Larry, I know that you weren't planning on this, but since I am the believer on the show, I would like to play a clip from the new Justin Bieber song.
I had a feeling you might.
I do happen to have it right here. And you guys tell me if this is kind of in the tradition of Girlfriend and some of his other hits, or if you think he's going in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Wheel in the sky keeps on turning.
It's got better pipes than I remember.
Kind of like it.
I like the beat. Here are some of the lyrics in the chorus that you didn't hit in that clip. They try to get at me behind your back, trying to tell me that I'm just like the others, but I ain't all bad. No, no, I ain't all bad. All bad, all bad. I ain't all bad. All bad, all bad. By the way, the name of the song, and he's just begging to have people slam him on this, is called All Bad.
All Bad.
Yeah, and... so it is.
Wow.
God damn it, no!
When you see a headline like this in the showbiz news, you get a little worried that maybe the Kardashian empire is having financial difficulties, that they're holding a yard sale. Yesterday in Woodland Hills, the Kardashians and the Jenners all got together for what ended up being for charity, which makes me mad because...
because you can't be mad at them for it?
Yeah, they did something nice.
Did they sell Bruce?
they had a couple of offers on the mannequin in the corner. At one point, also, Kim was caught stumbling and falling on a pile of crap somewhere over there. And, of course, every celebrity site had to go, good thing she had a lot of padding to fall on.
Hey, see
Shut
what we did?
Up.
It was proceeds going to No Kid Hungry and the Greater Los Angeles Fisher House Foundation.
But however, more importantly, they were shooting it, I'm sure, for a very special episode of the Keeping Up with the Kardashians show so they can all look good, right?
That's exactly what I was going to add. We can hate them again because they were catching it all on camera.
Of course. Of they don't course. Do anything unless it makes them look good on TV.
And here's another quick headline that I glanced at way too quickly this morning when I was a little too sleepy. I could have sworn that on TMZ.com it said, Oprah says, I'm still a cow. But I missed the word cash in front of cow, and then when I re-read it, wow, hello. Oprah may be on that OWN channel that nobody can find anymore and nobody's watching, but she's still making a bundle of money due to her favorite things that comes around holiday that... they've already got 170 orders in 24 hours as soon as the list was released, and they haven't even put that magazine issue out yet. So she's still finding a way to rake it in, no matter
I'm
what.
So fat.
No doubt. You've seen the headlines. It's no secret. I've gained weight.
I'm so fat.
Happy birthday, Leo DiCaprio, who celebrated last night with 2 Chainz and Kanye singing happy birthday to him, because that's what you do.
Sure.
Leo DiCaprio is 39. Demi Moore, 51 today, and still looking quite good. For that age. Stanley Tucci, 53. And Calista Flockhart, formerly Ally McBeal, now Mrs. Harrison Ford, is 49 years old. And there is your showbiz beat. Larry Morgan in for Ralph Garman today.
Ooh. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Bean Show.
Come on, no, man. Sir. We're like no, 2 sir. Weeks away from Thanksgiving. We're going to play our song.
No, Thanksgiving, ooh, Thanksgiving. Turkey things are going to happen.
Hoo, 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 you. You.
Thanksgiving cooks.
No way.
Seriously, this sucks.
Thanksgiving cooks. Behind the tree.
How dare you?
I mean, it's not even the real one. The real one sucks. And then this one is worse than that.
I'm just sad that DJ Omar Khan is not on the bill for night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas show. It's going to be on Sunday, December the 8th at the Shrine Auditorium. Night 1 we told you about last Monday is already sold out thanks to everybody who bought tickets Friday at noon. Proceeds going to some great local charities. I think Carlos Nino has got the charities for night number 1, and the Al Wooten Center, Heritage Center, gets the proceeds from night number 2. We just announced this earlier this morning, and if it's possible, this might be the best K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas lineup I can remember.
Both nights or just night 2?
Both nights. Both nights, yeah. I mean, really, you talk about the state of the union of the music that we play here on K-Rock. I don't know that we could have asked for more of our favorite bands to be playing over the course of that weekend. It really is. I'm not trying to pat us on the back because we don't have anything to do with it.
We're great. You know,
look, we're just going to be here as like fans, like you guys are. But my God, if you haven't heard this night 2 lineup, Kevin, tell them about it.
Well, wait, first of all, Arcade Fire.
Yes, great.
Really, that's enough.
Yeah.
Right?
And there are so many people in Arcade Fire. I almost feel like we could get up on stage and they might not even know.
They wouldn't even know. There's like 27 members. It's like Wu-Tang. When they get on stage, you never know who's going to be singing or what they're going to be playing. But Arcade Fire is one of those bands that was fantastic when they headlined Coachella.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was unbelievable. So they're going to be playing. Phoenix is another band that headlined Coachella. They're playing as well on night number 2. We made this announcement earlier this morning. The Neighborhood, Capital Cities, Lord is going to be there. Portugal the Man, Fits in the Tantrums, Atlas Genius, and another great band, Bastille, all night number 2.
We've had a lot of these bands come in and play for us live on the Kevin and Bean Show, including The Neighborhood, including Capital Cities, including Lord, including Bastille, including Atlas Genius, including Fits and the Tantrums. All of them have been here on the Kevin and Bean Show, and we're going to get to see them all again on stage for one night only. And by the way, how much of a slacker are you going to feel like sitting there watching Lord, who's turning into a great performer? She just turned 17 last week, and she's going to be on stage at the Shrine while we're all watching her. You know what I was doing when I was 17? I was throwing rocks at my neighbor, Robbie Joyner. That's what I was doing.
I think that was me.
Really?
Ticket on sale is the same as last week. Last week, we made the announcement on Monday, and then ticket on sale was Friday at noon. The exact same thing this week for night number 2 is we make the announcement today, and then Friday at noon, you have to be a K-Rock Street Team member. So you go to krock.com, you sign up, you get the password. They're going to ask you for the password Friday at noon, and you can buy tickets for night number 2 of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. We're going to do this quick, and then we're going to come back with Chael Sonnen.
Ladies and gentlemen, UFC 167 is happening this Saturday night at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. We couldn't be more excited to welcome to the show Chael Sonnen in studio with us here on K-Rock. Hi, Chael. How
are you? Let's hear it for me.
Let's hear it for you indeed. And it's so fascinating. I know you run into this everywhere you go, Mr. Sonnen, but, you know, your reputation precedes you, and you've got fighters calling you out as a douchebag in the publicity all the time, and people expect you to be that guy, and you come in and you couldn't be any friendlier or nicer or more polite.
It's because you're not going to fight him.
No, I think you've got me all right. I don't know if fighters are calling me out left or right or not. I'm a guy that's hard to get an opponent for, but we leave that in the octagon.
But you know what I mean? You're the most outspoken UFC fighter of all time, so you're going to rub people a lot the wrong way, and you enjoy that. I mean, you definitely are tweaking the system on purpose, right?
Yeah, I do prefer it. You know, I mean, we're in the fight business. I'm not here to promote fights, but I do enjoy picking a fight. And I'm not going to lie. If somebody asks me a question, I'm going to answer the question. If it hurts someone's feelings, too bad.
God bless you.
Love it.
How are you loving being a UFC fighter? Is it what you always dreamed of?
You know, for a large majority of my life, yeah, I grew up as a wrestler. I was in a wrestling family. And, you know, the whole point of wrestling was to find out who was the toughest, whether it was in your local school or if you were able to expand that onto a larger scale. And then the UFC came along, and that was the ultimate proving ground, you know, for who was toughest. So I didn't really have a choice. I had to transition into it. And above everything, I was just a big fan. I still am. I'm just a big fan, kind of living my dream.
What did you have to learn the most about in the UFC to become successful like you have?
If you mean skill set, yeah, again, skill set. I came from a wrestling background, and I still think that's probably the most predominant skill. But you've got to work on them all, your punches and your kicks. And then the sport keeps evolving. You know, we're seeing guys doing stuff that's brand new. Right when I think I've got my thumb on top of this thing, I go watch a guy like John Jones, and I got to go back in the gym and start over.
What the hell's going on?
Yeah. Oh, and happy Veterans Day, by the way, to everybody. I'm sure you guys have covered it, but I haven't. Happy Veterans Day, and thank you guys for your service.
Absolutely. We echo that. Chael, you've had some tough losses in recent years, but you never seem to lose your optimism or enthusiasm for the sport. Have you ever gotten to the point where you thought about quitting?
Quitting, not necessarily, but I can remember early in my career some of the struggles where I thought, well, maybe I've fulfilled this quest in my life and I can move on. The opportunities that have opened up are really quite new. When I first started in the UFC, they were only holding 5 events a year. If you could be a UFC veteran, it was a huge deal because there was no opportunity.
Right.
2014, our president Dana White announced we're going to have 50 events, almost one a week. So there's major opportunity now to participate and be involved, and that helps keep me and other people motivated.
Not just to participate, but to make money, too. They weren't making that much money back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I'm from a wrestling background where if I want to compete, I've got to pay my own way. I've got to pay an entry fee, and I'm okay with that. I prefer, you know, I love amateur sports and the Olympic Games. That's why I got involved. It was never about the fame or the money. But you are right. It has evolved and turned into an industry.
Your last fight was against Shogun. Is that the last one you did and won in August, right?
That's correct.
And that was, I mean, this just is like all, what? Go ahead.
I was going to say this is may sound like a stupid question, but were you surprised that you were able to choke him?
Yeah. And, you know, the truth is, I don't think Shogun had a very good night. I think there was something going on and he wasn't quite ready to perform. He has never said what I just said. He was a man about it. He shut his mouth. He let me have my 15 minutes of fame. He let me have my moment.
That you think there was
the right thing
that
to
was
do?
Sort of,
yeah, that wasn't the real Shogun. The next time we see Shogun, it's going to be a totally different animal. That was the Shogun you want to fight. All fighters always have bad nights. All human beings do. He had a bad night, but again, he was too much of a man to ever say it.
It's such a weird sport for that, though, because you really only fight. I mean, if you fight a lot, it's 3 or 4 times a year, right?
You're completely right. That's what's so tough.
You have an off night?
That's what's so tough. Yeah. You know, that's why we spend so much time trying to train and get with the right trainers and training partners to make sure you can perform in that moment. And you really don't have a choice. If you say you're going to be there, you got to show up and be there. And if it's not going to go your way, you got to walk out there and take it like a man anyhow.
What part, what percentage of time are you injured in some way? Always?
I think so. You know, injury as opposed to being hurt. You know, I think you're hurt all the time. I haven't been injured. I've been pretty lucky in that regard. But you're always sore, you know, I think it's a good feeling. I don't know what it feels like to feel good. I get asked that all the time, are you 100%? I always lie and say yes, but there's just no such thing. If you're training, you're working hard, you're doing the right things, you're not going to feel good. But, my father was a plumber. He never felt good. He worked hard every day. He never missed a day of work because he didn't feel good. I would never complain about not feeling good. Welcome to life.
Did he trash talk all the other plumbers on Twitter?
That's beautiful, and no, he didn't. Rest his soul. I hope he heard you somewhere. That's funny.
Chael Sonnen is here on the Kevin Beach Show talking about UFC 167 happening this Saturday night. By the way, the main card is going to be on pay-per-view starting at 7. The prelims on Fox Sports 1 starting at 5. Where do you honestly assess yourself among the UFC light heavyweight fighters, Chael? How good are you?
You know, I can beat anybody in the world, but the bad news for me is there's a lot of guys that can beat me too. There's a whole handful of guys, and it just really depends on who's going to show up on what night. And again, that's the way it is in like a tournament format. If you did the Olympic Games five times, you're going to have five different champions in every single sport. You look at the best NBA team in the world. Who won it? I think it was the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
They lost 20 games last year. They lost 20 games, and they were still the best team in the world. So that's what real sports is. You know, boxing is a little bit different than us. They'll shelter guys and protect them and make sure they're 30 wins and zero losses. But if you've never lost...
chumps, right?
If you haven't lost, you're just not fighting anybody. And that goes with anything. It doesn't have to be a fist fight. It could be a fight on a basketball court or anything else. But, you know, if you're out there and you're competing hard, you're going to suffer losses. That's a reality.
You're 36 years old now.
36 years young.
I mean, you look great for a civilian. You look great. If I'm a UFC fighter, though, I don't want to be 36 years old. Does that bother you? Does that worry you?
You know, it doesn't worry me, but I think what you're saying is true. I know when I was growing up, guys were done competing when they were 23 years old. Somewhere when I got into high school, it kind of extended and guys went to 27. Now we've got Dara Torres breaking her own records and making Olympic teams at 40 years old. There was a gymnast from Bulgaria that was 48 years old, Bernard Hopkins. Hopkins is beating people up at 48 years old. So that's changing. I know my body is okay, but the question comes to your mind. How tired do you get mentally? Can you still go to practice every day and stay motivated? That's the real struggle.
What about rehabbing after a fight? Does that take longer as you get older or no?
You know, I think you probably need longer, but I have to force myself to take less time. If I fight on a Saturday, I'm in the gym on Monday.
Holy crap.
No matter how bad I feel. Now, I'm not working at a high intensity, but I'm there. I got my clothes changed. I'm on the mat and I'm breaking a sweat every single day. And that's what you have to do, especially when you're talking about becoming older in a professional sport.
But you're a guy, though, Chael, who is going to make the smoothest transition into broadcasting that any athlete has ever made. I mean, you're doing it concurrently with still being a champion, right? I mean, you're doing both now, so it's going to be pretty easy for you to just keep going.
Well, that was a nice compliment. Yeah, I get to host a show called UFC Tonight over on Fox Sports 1. And it's, you know, again, that comes back to the industry. We have tremendous leadership headed by a man named Dana White. And he's created an industry, not just a job or not just a business for himself. But really a multi-billion-dollar a year industry for a lot of people, and I've been one of those that's fortunate enough to be with him for a while, and to get to go and do some of those other things like broadcasting.
Well, it's first class operation. We love Dana. We have nothing but respect for him. And by the way, this may surprise a lot of people. This year is the 20th anniversary of the UFC. First fight for the UFC was back in 1993.
Kidding.
Can you believe it's been that
long?
That's
when it was outlawed in most states,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
No, that's incredible. And 20 is a big number. That's higher than Vanderlei Silva can even count. That's that's truly incredible.
There it is.
There it is.
No, I'm just saying it's a big deal. We have the anniversary. The UFC will celebrate its birthday this Saturday night at 7 p.m. 10 in the East, and only on pay-per-view. There's nothing bigger than this except for Vanderlei's forehead.
More with our guest Chael Sonnen, where we return on the Kevin DeBean Show. UFC light heavyweight fighter Chael Sonnen in studio with us here on the Kevin DeBean Show. He's going up against Rashad Evans this Saturday night in Las Vegas for UFC 167. Here's why I like Chael is because he's humble and he's reserved and he's quiet. and he keeps to himself pretty much. Like
sometimes interviews are difficult because we can't pull answers out of him.
Right. Like the last time we saw him in the ring post-fight with Joe Rogan.
All right, I am here with the winner, Chael Sonnen. First of all, Chael, congratulations. And how does it feel to be back in the win column?
I'm the man of the hour, Joe. Too sweet to be sour. What you see is what you get, and what you don't is better yet. I'm the women's pick. I'm the men's regret. And if you win against Chael Sonnen, you made a bad bet now.
How do you have that much energy after you've just competed in a UFC fight? Where's all this coming from?
I just wanted to say hello to Joe Rogan. I wanted to answer his question. I didn't know if he forgot that I was the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour. I had to remind him.
Do you end up with a bunch of extra energy when you end a fight short? Like you ended it in the first round. Do you have a bunch of energy that's sort of built up? Or no?
I think you have a little bit of adrenaline going more than anything. I think we see a lot of crazy thing at the end of sporting events, particularly when they go your team's way or, you know, in my case, my way. But I think that's what that is. More than anything, I'm always tired. You get tired about 2 minutes in, you just got to gut it out.
I understand the physical training and you spend a lot of your time doing that. What can you do for mental training to be prepared in a fight situation to have that extra spark to keep going?
Really, that just comes from experience, and you're either going to do it or you aren't. But you can't control how you feel, and you know, there's imagery and there's things that you can work on to try to simulate an event, but there's really nothing like it except going out and do it. I've fought 49 men, and I mean, I feel the same thing, anxiety and all of that, for number 50 coming up this Saturday, live on pay-per-view, as I do for the very first one ever. It really never changes or goes away. You just got to deal with it.
How much do you focus on, in this case, Rashad Evans?
Oh, you know, as best I can. Focus is more a word that people use to sell books. It's not really a reality with human beings. They say if we focus the best we can focus about 10% of our brain on a topic. I don't think about it too much. I focus on myself a lot. I've got my process in terms of my warm-up, how much I sleep, what I eat the day of, that whole thing. And eventually they're going to call my name. And when they do, I'll put my mouthpiece in and I'll make that walk.
What do you do this week? What's your typical week before the fight like?
Well, there's a lot of media this week, which is fun. I like to talk about the sport, and I like when people have an opportunity to tune in, so I got to do my part to let them know when they can do that and how. But
and that's this Saturday night on pay-per-view.
I know, that's right. Thank you for mentioning that. Live from the MGM Grand, and it's sold out, too. Don't try to buy tickets, suckers. You waited too long, but you can tune in from your living room like the rest of the world. Biggest show in UFC history is going down.
Well, you do have George St. Pierre.
Yes, we do.
And Johnny Hendricks.
That's right.
And then you and Rashad.
They're what we call the encore. I will be the main event, and then what we've got is an encore of GSP versus Johnny Hendricks, which is like a great fight.
It's like an after party.
Yeah, it's a huge fight. I can't wait to see it.
One of our listeners, Tim, writes in, Tail Chael, no pressure, but I have him on my parlay with Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler. How does that sound to you, Chael? Does that sound like he's bet the right way on this week?
He'll win a lot of money if those come through. I don't know if I agree with all those or not, but I like it. And Tim, I hope you do well.
Chael, what's different for you now as a married man?
Oh, you know, different? I'm sure there are some things. I can't really put my finger on it. Married life is great. You know, I'm 36. I took my time. I found the right one. And I'm glad I did it. But it's not for everybody. You don't have to get married. Don't feel that you do and don't rush into it would be my advice.
But sure does seem to be that understanding is that you need to get married. That does seem to be an American thing.
Yeah, and I went through that too. You know, I was in college and thought, well, I guess I got to get married. And then I turned about 27 and realized, well, no, I don't. You don't have to get married. And, you know, make sure you do it for the right reasons. And I think you'll be happily
ever
after. I think
Brittany is the right reason, by the way, Chael.
Yeah, she was worth waiting for. I'm glad I did.
Tell Lisa and maybe some of the ladies listening what a smooth operator you are. Tell the kids the move that you made to get her number.
To get Brittany's number, the night I met her, I went up and said hello, and she ran away. She was, you know, we were in like a two-story building, and I didn't get to talk to her very long. So the next time I searched the whole building, I found her again. And I said, hey, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you, but can I borrow your phone? My phone went dead. I have to make a call. So she lent me her phone, and I called myself. I had my phone in my pocket on vibrate. So when it vibrated, I knew I had captured her number.
Smooth, right?
Yeah, so I gave her phone back, and we're standing there. Then I take my phone out of my pocket, and I instantly text her and said, don't loan your phone to strangers. A lot of weirdos out there.
Nice. That's
and,
pretty sweet.
Yeah, she thought that was pretty funny. And we went out the next night.
Now, she was at a fight. She met you at a fight, but she didn't know who you were, right?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it was a promotion that I put on in the Northwest, and yeah, she was at it to watch and support a friend of some level, and yeah, she was not a fight fan. I don't know if she's a fight fan still to this day.
Does she watch your fights?
Yeah, she watches them all. She's in the front row. She goes to practice with me every day. But I think she'd probably rather be doing something else. I'm not sure she loves this sport. I told her I was a wrestler, and she goes, "Oh, so you weren't good enough to play football, huh?"
Oh.
And I said, "What?" And she goes, "Well, yeah, that's what wrestlers are. They're the guys that can't make it in football,
you
a real
your
sport."
Match.
Yeah. But she was serious. I had to educate her. Or do my best. I don't think I've won her over. Still a football fan.
Please don't ever get a divorce because I don't want to hear the smack talking you would be making about an ex-wife. That would
no,
be ugly,
I will not.
Dale.
I'm Catholic. We're not allowed to get divorced.
Now, why are you spending so much time calling out Vandalay instead of Rashad Evans? It seems like you've had less to say about the fight this weekend than you do about the fight that's going to happen sometime in 2014.
Yeah, that's true. You know, Rashad Evans is a really hard fight, and Vandalay Silva's terrible. And I'm just trying to get an easy fight. I'm trying to navigate my way through the channels of the UFC, and I went after low hanging fruit, I guess you could say.
Now you're gonna be coaching in the Ultimate Fighter, right?
That's right, in Brazil.
In Brazil, okay, and that's against him.
Against Vandalay Silva, yeah, or with Vandalay. It depends how you say it. He'll have his team, and I'll have my team, and those athletes will compete.
Strong. Hey, before we let you go, Chael, and again, UFC 167 celebrating the 20th anniversary of the UFC this Saturday night, MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. The main card available on pay-per-view. Prelims air on Fox Sports 1 at 5. Didn't we have Chael on one time, Kevin, and he told us that he was going to quit? He was going to quit the business
if he
lost
the next
fight?
Yeah, he said it in the ring. Yeah.
But I think you said it to us, too. How do you get away with saying, I'm going to quit if I lose, and then not quitting when you lose, Chael? How do you work that?
Well, you got to understand, it was an offer. I was asking a gentleman to fight me, and I was willing to put my career on the line for the fight. He rejected the offer, and I had to fight another guy, then I had to fight another guy, then Dana White finally forced the guy to get in the ring. So, you know, it's like any offer. They expire if you don't take it, and I guess that one was good that it did. I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
No quitting, though. No plans to retire at this point. You're just going to keep on going as long as you can go.
I think that's right. I think that's a fair statement.
All right, good deal. Chael Sonnen, this Saturday night, see him from Las Vegas. Man, it's fun to have you in today. We really, really enjoyed it, Chael. I wish you and Brittany all the best, and good luck in the fight this weekend.
I appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Hey, listen, before we go, before we tell you about tomorrow's all-new Kevin and Bean show, we have a great opportunity for Spider-Man fans. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is having a fan event at Sony Studios. Check this out, guys. The cast is going to be there. Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Jamie Foxx will be in attendance. You get to hang out with them and see 12 minutes of exclusive footage from the film, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, in theaters coming up on May 2nd, 2014. I know that's a long ways away, but you get a chance to see 12 minutes of it early. If you want to go, if you like Spidey, give us a call right now at 1-800-520-1067. Callers 10, 11, and 12. Win right now from the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Tomorrow we have a fantastic show, and I don't have my paperwork here, so you'll just find out tomorrow morning.
Okay, fine. Last